We are now recording.
Okay, we have a quorum, so we're going to bring this meeting to order.
We have to take a vote first. We have to take a roll call first.
Right. Excuse me. At 9:39.
9:33.
9:33.
Mr. Hayden, if we could have a roll call, please.
Roger Skaggs?
Yeah, I'm on the phone. Yeah, present.
Peter Leeds?
Present.
Paul Sterry?
Present.
Kent Wilson?
He's muted.
Present also.
Michael Kolejka?
All right, we have a quorum.
Okay. We'll do a call to the public. Now, I do want to remind you that the members of the public may address the committee during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to our rules, the committee members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda. Our public member here is Keith. Keith, is there anything you want to talk about that's not on the agenda?
No.
Negative. Okay. Any other calls from the public on the phone?
Mr. Gilland is on the phone, but I believe he's going to speak on the parallel inspector agenda item.
Okay. Anyone else? Hearing none, we'll move along to the adoption of the minutes. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, motion to approve the meeting minutes as defined.
Do I hear a second, Roger?
Yeah, I'll second that.
All in favor?
Just see if there was anything else, Peter. You didn't see anything, huh?
No.
Yeah.
I had no problems with it.
Maybe a roll call because you have a couple on the phone.
I'll do a roll call.
Hayden gave me that for you. Go ahead, Hayden.
Roger Skaggs?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, Roger, this is a roll call vote to approve the minutes.
Yeah, I second the approval of the minutes as written.
Okay.
Thank you, Roger.
Peter Leeds?
Yes.
Paul Sterry?
Yeah, approve.
Kent Wilson?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Yeah. Very good. The motion is carried. Let's move on to number 5A.
Peter, can I ask you a question or recommendation? Can you go to C first, and then we can all...
So, Mr.
Yeah.
You'll end would also be able to jump in on that.
Okay. Your reasoning?
Oh, because this other thing drags on forever, and if we can just get some...
Something else on the agenda?
Right away on C, that'd be great.
Okay, let's go to 5C. 5C is parallel inspection requirements. Now, as far as this goes, where did these questions about parallel inspection requirements come from?
We had received an email from Brick as well as Mr. Gillarand, just requesting a discussion with these requirements, and it looks like Keith also might have questions or wish to discuss it.
Is Mr. Gillum with us?
He is. You can see him up there on the top there.
Mr. Gillum, why don't you talk to us about your concerns with parallel inspection requirements?
Thank you. What I wanted to discuss with you guys is I've been through the classroom training for the inspection program. I've taken the state exam and passed that. And now I only need to conduct 30 parallel inspections so I can get certified to do home inspections. I've contacted everybody that's on the list within at least 100-mile radius of myself, and I've received one response who said they're so far behind that there's no way they're going to be able to help me. And I'm just concerned that my future and success is resting on future competitors that have no vested interest in helping me, and I just find it hard to believe that that's the only way to get certified. I've got 30 years of federal contracting experience writing quality control programs for the military, so I have the experience. I'm wondering if the board would consider or entertain at least discussing an exemption or a waiver or something based on life experience and work education and experience combined.
Keith.
Where's he located?
Say that louder, please. You can ask.
I live in Rio Rico, just south of Tucson, closer to Nogales, actually, in Santa Cruz County.
Our school, I mean, we've got plenty of availability, but he'd have to come up to Phoenix. I don't know if he wants Phoenix or just Tucson. That'd be the issue, Tucson. Not a lot of people live there.
Mr. Gillum, is it? Mr. Gillum, Terry, is it? This forum is not going to be able to change the rules for you like you're looking for, but there are other options, such as the schools that offer parallel inspections, that you may want to contact. If you're looking to get a rule change, you're going to need to not address the Rules and Standards Committee, unfortunately. You're going to have to address the board itself.
It can start here. You can submit things to board staff that we could. I mean, we're looking at other rules right now. It's a lengthy process. It would need to be changed in rule to make anything like that happen.
My experience with this committee is that it has never been agreeable to reduce or even change any of those 30 parallel inspections. From the beginning of this certification program, we started with 100 parallel inspections and have settled down on 30. And for 25 years now, or 22 years, it has not been a problem getting the parallel inspections. Now, being on the Enforcement Advisory Committee as well, I have noticed that we have applications coming in left and right. I've been doing most of my work in my office is reviewing home inspector applications, so I know that it's very busy out there for home inspectors getting certified. But the parallel inspections, unless members have changed their opinion, the committee feels that 30 parallel inspections is the least that we're going to be able to get from our applicants.
I would just want to say, when you guys talk, please announce your names, just because they are remote, so they can't see us.
If you don't recognize my voice yet, this is Peter Leeds, chairman of the committee right now.
This is David Swartz. I had something to add, if possible.
Go ahead, David.
So Arizona ASHI at azashi.org maintains a list of folks willing to do parallels, and this is probably just a partial list, but I look on there now, and Brick Gabor is shown as serving Santa Cruz County, Pinal County. I don't know. This is a great resource for those that are struggling to find folks. So that is a list. You can just go to that website at azashi.org and obtain information there.
This is Kurt Thanks. Winter. Mr. Gillen, did you indicate that you looked at a list? What list did you look at prior?
I looked at the list that the gentleman just spoke about, and like I said, I've contacted every one of those people that are registered with the state to perform parallel inspections, and I've received one contact response from everybody that I contacted, and that person said they were so behind that they were never going to be able to help me. So that's my frustration, is I want to comply with the program, whatever your requirements are, but I'm attempting to, and I can't, and it's too much of a burden to try and go to Phoenix, because I live, you know, 3.5 hours away from Phoenix, so it's too far to commute, and I can't afford to relocate myself up there until I can get 30 inspections.
Mr. Keith, comments?
At this point, no. I mean, I'm trying to get people in Tucson to do it too, and I can't. I can't find anybody that wants to do it.
Same
with Yuma. Yuma's tough.
We used to have a school down in Tucson, didn't we? What was his name?
Oh, he went from Sun something?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Gillen, this is Paul Sterin. I would recommend try to reach out to Brick Gabor again at Brick by Brick. He's been very involved with our legislation, our regulation, and he's also, of course, busy. But if he cannot help you, maybe he can let you know who else in Tucson might be able to help, and they may or may not be on that list that you looked at. But Brick knows, you know, very knowledgeable as far as the Tucson area. Obviously, there's some options for you if you chose to come up to the Phoenix area and availability for parallel inspections in the Phoenix area. But understand your concern about trying to get it done in Tucson. That's my best recommendation. And we have on the line, we have Roger Skaggs, the Arizona ASHI chapter president. And we'll also see if he has any other options that he's aware of for parallels in Tucson.
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not at all familiar with the Tucson market. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. Thanks anyway. But you know, for now, Mr. Gillen, that may be the best that we can do for you to try to assist you with trying to find somewhere down there. I don't think we always would like to have the parallel inspections provided, you know, at the north and the central and the south areas of the state, but it's sometimes hard to always make that available. We're happy that there's always parallel inspections available at the state level, but at the local level, sometimes it's hard to always maintain the full coverage. So sorry for your challenges there.
Yeah, to me, inherently, you've identified exactly what I think the problem is with the certification process. If it's so burdensome that I have to relocate my family for a short duration of time just to obtain the parallel inspection, then I think there's a problem with the system. So I'll address it through other means, and I certainly appreciate everybody's time, and I appreciate this opportunity to be heard. So
yeah, and thank you for being here.
Okay, Mr. Gillen, any other comments on parallel inspections?
Okay. That was it for me. Thank you very much.
So, Mr. Smith?
No, he doesn't. You're done?
Well, I'm waiting for this, the rest of this stuff that you're going to go through the definitions and things. I wasn't sure what you're bringing up.
Okay, you want to go through them first, is what you're saying.
I think we need to go through the whole 5C, right?
That's 5D. Okay, we'll jump right to 5D. Possible rules clarification and rules for revision to be incorporated into the rules package for recommendation to the board. We'll start with ADA, home inspection definitions. This definition is AAC R430102.
Which is in our packet, right?
Yeah, it's at the bottom of the packet.
So this has been on the agenda for a number of meetings. We never get to it because the SOP has been the forefront. And so basically this is just board staff looking over the rules, you know, trying to clarify things for ourselves, for our administrative processes, as well for both enforcement as well as licensing, what makes sense, what doesn't, what language feels clunky to us, if, you know, anything like that. So this is not a final form in any way, shape, or form. This is us playing with it, you know, making suggestions, making edits to where we feel like it would make more sense for at least how we've, you know, have dealt with it in our experiences with applicants as well as those going through the investigative process.
Okay, now on item number one, parallel inspections, what I see here is that somebody making comment one, I don't know who it is, actually said...
It's Kurt.
Oh, Kurt. Thank you, Kurt. Okay, Kurt recommends that we change applicant to home inspector candidate because at this point in the game, the application has not really been filed, and therefore he's not an applicant. I have no problems with that. David?
I don't think that would be troublesome.
Okay. Also, we move. Paul, did you see anything
no,
with
no,
that?
No,
okay. Also, we move down to for the purpose of meeting the requirements for certification pursuant to blah blah blah. And that was a comment. Everyone commented. Isn't it the parallel inspector's responsibility to make sure there aren't too many applicant candidates? I think it's everyone's responsibility, but yes, it is the parallel inspector's ultimate responsibility.
You mean the four?
Yeah, to be sure there's not too many people on the job. So what brought that on, Kurt?
I just didn't want a candidate going through this process, and there happens to be five or, you know, too many people there. They're not really aware that that's too many people. It's the parallel inspector
that's
who should
the
be.
The new guy versus the parallel who should know what they're doing.
And so they turned in their log, and then we're like, oh, this somehow, some way we find out there's too many. What happens to that parallel inspection? Is it nixed? Did they pay for something they didn't get now because they had too many people? Is it really their fault because of that? And so that's what that came from.
Are there other ways to handle that? I mean, for instance, if a guy goes on the job, he doesn't realize that there's five parallel inspectors there. I mean, that they're overbooked, all right? And he goes through the process. Why would we take away his parallel inspection when the responsibility falls on the parallel inspector? Okay.
What do you do to the inspector?
Because the definition of a parallel inspection is it can't have more than that. So
I understand that is wrong, but why would that be the disciplinary action? Why would we go after the not applicant? What do we want to call?
Because it's not a legal
candidate?
Parallel. Right.
Well, why would we go after him when it's the parallel inspector's problem?
Well, I think that's what Kurt just basically said.
He wants it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I just don't want.
I don't think that we would. I don't think even the board would go. I mean, if the guy has a case, he says, "I didn't know. This is his responsibility. He's the one who should be fined or suspended." Or
It doesn't say that though. It doesn't say who's responsible. That's what we're trying to get to here.
Well, my thing here too is at the very. I'm going to skip ahead to the very bottom of this because under our home inspector rules of professional conduct. We have be accompanied by more than four home inspector candidates while conducting any parallel home inspection. That's where they can get dinged because that's not part of their professional conduct. You had too many people on your parallel inspection. That's what we would say. You did something wrong. It's not part of your professional conduct.
Whose professional conduct?
The parallel inspector.
Right.
So it's already there, but that's the confusing thing is you have this language, but at the very top, back up to the 101, it's saying that it does. It's basically not a parallel inspection if there are too many people with that language there. And that's why I was suggesting crossing that out.
I think you're creating a loophole here. I think you got to leave it the way it is. I mean, they're both responsible, I personally think. It's the parallel inspector and the student.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
If you leave it there, you got a much better chance of it not happening. Simply because now, I mean, the parallel inspector has to understand what parallel inspection is. And if you're telling him right there that he's not allowed to do this with any more than three other applicants, boom, he shows up, there's four applicants, he'd raise the flag right then, wouldn't he?
But the idea of what happens, and this is what I thought would happen, if you do have more than four, then all five, it doesn't count.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Why do that?
Well, otherwise you're creating an opportunity for people to just have as many as they want if you're not going to do it.
And then what kind of teaching is really taking place?
Yeah. You've got to have...
Well, I understand that too, but if, say for instance, there's four instead of five, instead of three, okay?
Five instead of four.
Okay, well, no more...
We've gone
okay,
down
yeah, here. Five instead of four, okay? Yeah. Nobody realizes this until it's too late. All five of these guys are going to lose this parallel inspection?
Yeah.
That's the way it's written.
As written.
Well, I don't mind that, but really the problem with that is that it wasn't their responsibility, and this is where
it
Kurt
was the supervisor's problem.
Supervisor's responsibility. He is the one who ought to. I mean, if those inspections meet the standard, if they've been reviewed, if they pass the muster, why would we want to ding an applicant when it's really not his problem. It's the parallel inspector's problem. We should have known better.
But, you know, that's the other thing. You don't have any governance on that parallel inspector regarding
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
So
there is no designation.
Yeah. So you've got to stick to what you have in there.
Personally, I'm not a discipline guy. Discipline comes from the board. You know, this committee won't issue discipline. The board would. So the board would decide whether or not these guys are bad off or that. But I don't understand.
The board is bound by what is in rule.
Which I understand too.
And if that says more than four negates what it is, mm-hmm. then.
But I could see
regardless of who you think should or shouldn't be disciplined,
right.
it shouldn't be accepted based on the rule.
But I could see the board sitting here debating the same thing. Who are we going to discipline? Everybody or just the guy who's responsible?
It doesn't clarify that.
Right. It basically says if there's more than the allotted number, then.
Yeah. So if Kurt says we should pull out in the presence of no more than three other applicants, would that take the applicant off the hook?
Well, and I was going to say that there's no investigation or any kind of anything like that against the applicant. It would just be going through the application process. If we found out, that would just not count that particular one.
Yeah.
And that's what would happen if this was.
Investigation. The licensing team is looking at all of these things, and that's how a lot of these questions.
And they're eagle-eyed, by the way.
Come up. Yes, they are, which is good.
So the reason to consider removing this is because it's extraneous?
I just didn't find it fair, but it wasn't, again, this is more of a suggestion than, like,
I really feel
like this has to happen.
It seems to me that it's doing more good than harm by staying in here
right.
to remind both sides of the transaction that it's an important conduct to adhere to.
Okay.
That's, you know, my two cents on it anyway. It's doing no harm and maybe some good.
I think it's doing a lot of good.
Okay.
It's having the people look at this parallel inspection day from both sides. But it's also bringing the parallel inspector into the liability.
And
not,
directly.
Not the parallel inspector,
yeah.
the candidate into liability.
And the definition of parallel inspector, which ties back to the number that they're going to take around, you know, that's directly correlates here on 102 rules. Mm-hmm. So
what happens if you find a parallel inspector that allows more than four?
There's an opportunity for disciplinary action, I believe, to the parallel or supervising inspector, I think.
Is there? Because I didn't see anything.
I thought there was an allowance for that. Peter, don't you remember something?
Ask the question again.
I missed the question. Sorry.
Yeah, so if the supervising or parallel inspector violates this rule, is there any jurisdiction to come back at him? And I thought we had the ability to go back to the supervising inspector.
The parallel inspector.
The parallel inspector, who's supervising, with disciplinary if needed.
Yes.
What?
Right?
What disciplinary?
These are rules.
Doesn't state.
There may need to be a complaint put in first, right? Just like anything else in the world.
Rules of conduct.
So, yeah, it falls under R-43301, Home Inspector Rules of Professional Conduct, just like if somebody doesn't meet the standards for the SOP, you know, this is what they get dinged on, this particular rule, and it's the same thing, number four, must be accompanied. So
what happens?
Somebody would have to put a complaint against them. Maybe, I don't know how it would go about, but my concern, again, the parallel candidate goes through too many people. His parallel inspection is not counted. He doesn't get licensed quickly or whatever because of it.
Yeah.
Says, whatever, that was not my fault. I'm putting a complaint against that parallel inspector. And then I would say the investigators would be looking at number four here to see if he met his professional conduct under this rule.
Okay, and then what? What's the potential?
Well, we can't speculate on that. What would happen?
Well, I mean,
if you've got a parallel out there and he's intentionally taking people's money and running too many people through, and he knows this and he's not staying within professional conduct, and that comes to the board, like a student complains, like, yeah, there's 10 out here and he's taking all our money, and that's not, you know, I would hope that came to some kind of discipline?
I can tell you what would happen. He would get disciplinary action and not be able to do parallels again because he has to be 3 years clear of disciplinary action from the board. All right?
You know,
that's in the definition.
Have we had that happen that you know of?
Not that I know of.
No, but the best chance
there's been letters sent to parallel inspectors saying, be careful, you're not doing something right. I think there's not letter of reprimand, but there's been letters, I believe, over the years, at least to a couple.
Well, the letters were to clarify, not because something was being done improperly.
Okay.
Okay, we clarify. When a rumor comes around, a letter might go out. But there wasn't any disciplinary, and there wasn't any complaint. And those letters, yes, have gone out, but
right.
only to tell them you can't do this, so be aware. And that letter generally was a general letter. But the as far as catching this, staff is eagle eye. Staff
they are eagle.
Will
I think it's
will
great.
Find,
I
could
think
find
if, you can, if there's okay. a this situation happening, and you need to get on it.
And my question about and right now is a time when this may very well happen. Since parallel inspectors are swamped, since applications are swamped, I mean
since
this could
the market is out of control.
Out of control. This could very well happen, but on the other hand, I lost my train of thought.
I don't know, but I'm following you.
Yeah, well, good. Well, tell me where I'm going.
No, I'm lost with you.
Yeah, but the whole idea is that it would fall into the same potential for disciplinary action as any other complaint, right?
Right?
But nothing happens until a complaint is filed by
right.
you or me or somebody trying to get their 30. Yeah.
And that's where I wanted to go with that. If staff should find something like this, does staff file a complaint?
I don't think staff can initiate
anybody
a complaint.
Anybody can initiate
can
a complaint.
An administrative complaint?
Sure.
Can you?
That's what I would ask.
Some others have shied away from that in the past and say, oh, you guys got to bring it up yourself.
So if staff found something like this going on, what would they do? What would their procedure be?
Julie's licensing people would come to Julie, and Julie would come to me, and we'd have a discussion about it and try to figure out what was going on. That doesn't...
Right.
That's how other issues with parallel...
Would that instigate an investigation?
Speculative. Who knows?
Speculative. Right.
But that's the question I had. That's where it needs to be kind of clarified. So if you get that, you got to know what to do with it.
Well, I think that's almost a case by case when it's not. I mean, if there's something that's not clear, then you're just going to have to go.
If it's more than four, that's.
If it's more than four, and that's clear, and you can correlate the exact, you know.
Right.
Address the person, all that.
Just talking possibilities.
Yeah. I would not just look the other way on that. I would definitely.
Good. That's what we need to know.
Forward.
I think from a licensing perspective, like we wouldn't catch this because there's nowhere on our application that asks like how many other people were on your parallel inspection, right? So I would assume it would have to come from a primary source like the applicant or, you know, another inspector filing.
Or if all applicants happen to have like one fall within the same
exactly.
person because the applicants come in and they're divided
right,
alphabetically between the licensing specialists.
Right. So the specialists don't talk about, okay, do you guys have this address on this date? So it would be very difficult for licensing to catch that. But if someone were to call me and tell me that, you know, they would be the primary source
if
to
somehow
file
it came
that complaint.
To light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you would just inform them, you know, if you feel like something
exactly.
wrong happened, you would contact Doug Parlin and talk to him about it and see if a complaint. You would like to put in a complaint.
Is Doug on the line?
I think he is.
Doug, are you?
I am.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Do you have anything you want to add there? Anything you've recently or in the last few years heard about or had come your way?
Not really. Not that I can think of. I've been following this, thinking if I should jump in at any point, but there isn't really anything that I could add to it.
Okay.
But you would look into it. If it came to him.
Well, that was Scott Donald, not Doug Merlin.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'll commit to anything.
Yeah, ultimately, one thing to keep in mind anytime there is a discussion, though, when it comes to potential discipline with regards to parallel inspectors, is that it becomes a question of whether or not something's a violation of professional standards. Otherwise, you're much more likely to get into a civil dispute if you're talking about an issue with a parallel inspector and a trainee, because it's much more likely to be a civil dispute between them than it is to be an actual question of professional responsibility. So that may be where some of these questions get a little dicey.
And I'm just going to say it, you know, regardless of what you think, because it doesn't really matter, it's just my opinion, but I still think the more I learn about this whole process that parallel inspectors should have some kind of actual certification. Like you are, like it's, you're a home inspector, but then for, you know, there's a different
level.
Yep.
That way they understand all the rules and stuff. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I've been saying that for years.
Something.
We tried to make it a little tougher. We tried to make it a little tougher.
You would just, if there's
but
an
anyway,
actual,
so let's move along from this. We know where this is going. Everything else in this paragraph one is actually changing applicant to candidate, and then we changed the candidate shall not perform any fee-paid home inspections during this parallel inspection period. However, we cross that out to say until they are registered as an Arizona certified home inspector. I have no problems with the change.
Yeah.
Anyone else have a problems with that change? Roger, you're probably not looking at it.
I hope not.
But, but you must have read it over the weekend. Do you have any problems with that change on number one right now?
No, I do not. That's fine. Do you hear me?
Yes, yeah. We heard you. Okay, thank you, Ron.
I'm in agreement. I approve it.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to number two, where it says parallel inspector means an Arizona certified home inspector who, crossing out performs, supervises and reviews parallel inspections pursuant to the rule for the home inspector candidate for the purpose of meeting the requirement for certification pursuant to the rule. What we're doing is changing performs to supervises and reviews. Anyone have a problem with that? Paul?
So if the parallel inspector has not performed the inspection, how do we know if the trainee missed something? But I understand the concept of who the primary is on that parallel. It's supposed to be the trainee, the applicant, if you will.
So your concern is that the parallel inspector is not actually doing an inspection, but only the trainees are.
Right.
That wasn't the intent.
That was not the intent.
The intent was for the parallel inspector to be doing an inspection and his trainees to be doing them in tandem.
Right.
That's possible. Does that change that?
How do you supervise the inspection if
you're not performing
any part of it?
By definition of supervises, observe and direct the execution of a project, task, or activity.
Right.
What if we were to leave it performs and has performs, supervises, and reviews?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a lot of heartburn with taking performs out.
Not a hill to die on.
Not for me.
Nor I.
But I don't feel that strongly one way or the other, I guess, on it.
David, you got any input on this? Mr. Schwartz?
I don't know. I think it's, sometimes we overthink things a little bit and we've gone on, you know, I think it's logical because we have to focus so much on what every word means, but I don't know that we're not addressing a problem, that's for sure, that I know of, but I don't have a strong opinion on any of it.
Roger, how about you?
No, I think we're heading in the right direction.
Can't you?
What about if we get the word conduct in there somewhere? Conduct is organized and carry out, lead or guide, conducts while supervising and reviewing. I don't know. I just, performance just didn't seem the best choice of words. And if we're bothering to do a rule package and a cleanup, that's why Kurt and I spent an inordinate amount of time looking at these words.
Because this is our one shot to do this, to clean it up, right?
I mean, if we're allowed to open a rule package, yes.
Yeah,
I
no, that's a can works. Of worms is open and you go for it. But
I'm sorry.
No, so our main concern is trying to fix the problems with it. But then, obviously, the next step is cleaning up what we can while we have the opportunity.
Okay, now we need to move parallel inspector we're talking about him doing parallel inspection. So if we go up to the definition of parallel inspection, it means a home inspection completed by a candidate that is supervised by a certified home inspector. So if we were to pull performs out of there and just put supervisors and reviews, Keith, do you see any problem with a parallel inspector merely supervising and reviewing?
No, I don't.
How about you, Paul? David? Roger?
Yeah, supervised review, that sounds good.
That's teaching. That's perfect.
All right,
sounds good.
And it correlates better with the definition of parallel inspector to take out performs and put in supervising reviews.
Scott, do you have any thoughts on that?
No. Nothing specific.
And Kent, you're our new member. Do you see any problem with that?
No, sir.
Okay, good. So let's move on to pursuing blah, 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 blah. And then we go, a parallel inspector shall be in good standing with the board. We go all the way down to where that's all the same, except I do have a notation here that says, does this need to be updated? The applicant shall provide a signed attestation as opposed to affidavit. I think we're all in agreement with that.
Get rid of the notary.
Right. It's been a big issue.
Yes, it has. An affidavit, we have found out, needs a notary. An attestation does not. So anybody have a problem with that change? No?
Yeah. And you guys didn't want to update the 3 years, 250 paid home inspection bit?
No.
Now, the reason we're laughing is because Keith and I sat in front of GIRC for two meetings, was it? Maybe three? Debating 250 and 3 years and 5 years. And I was on the 5-year side. He was on the 3-year side. 3 years went out. That does not need to be updated. Attestation does. This was determined by the HR committee, blah, blah, blah. It's responsible. A good question. How would this work? Sounds like, okay. I don't see any other changes in there that are necessary.
We have had people ask about, I've done a million home inspections in three other states.
Well, that's up to the board now.
Why do I have to? Well, I'm just throwing it out for your opinion, I guess. I mean, do you think there should be any exception for somebody who has extensive experience? I'm just asking.
Well, I've done thousands of inspections in other states, in New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey. However, none of them were to the standard that we have here in Arizona. I mean, there was no standard at that point.
Because they're, again, just relaying the message that their issue was that they are so well-versed in this and have so much experience coming from another state that it is excessive for them to have to wait for three years if they can show that they know what they're doing and have extensive experience.
If we had training for parallel inspection.
And a designation.
That would work.
And I would say, I think the gentleman you're talking about actually did come before this committee.
He did.
So
he did, and there was nothing we could do for him.
There's nothing you could do for him
unless we change the rule.
Right, which is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, but we're dumbing down the rules.
Is there a need for a
certification?
Well, you already know that. exception or, in the event, the individual, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I mean, you don't want to budge.
I'd like to recommend we put this on the next future meeting agenda item to more fully discuss. I guess we could here if you want to dig into it, Peter, but maybe we just take a look at just the pros and cons of having some mini certification for the parallel inspector.
Maybe
that would help define some of this and the reciprocity issue and some of these other things.
And in addition to that, also to think with the parallels, what is the root the cause, not the cause, but the great need for the parallels, the purpose of the parallels is to make sure that the home inspector is fully trained and versed and ready to go out and be a good home inspector, right? And so,
and learn the Arizona rules.
So does there need to be a little bit more criteria with the 30 parallel inspections, like, for instance, and again, just thinking out loud, like, no more than 5 of the inspections should be in, I don't know how you word it, like condominium type situations, mm-hmm. so that all 30 of their inspections, so that they have a good sampling of different things, not just that they did 30 condo inspections in a multi-unit complex,
yeah.
Or, you know, just, so I'm not saying, you know, you must do 5 of this or you must do 5 of this, but no more than 5 of any particular category of inspection or something like that. That's just something I was thinking about.
I was in agreement with you up until there. but the, Hayden, if we could put on the future agendas, okay, a discussion about reciprocity, which we have no control over right now, 30 parallel or parallel inspections for people coming in from out of state, so we can make it as general as you can, so that we can actually discuss all the different options that we need, that we are bringing up right now, to determine whether there will be another way to do this without 30 parallel inspections for the guy who's 75 years old and been in the business for 102. Okay.
Right, and we can't have reciprocity for something that we don't offer. So since we have actually no actual distinctive thing for a parallel, right? So
right.
Because
the parallel inspections, we were taking, when we wrote this rule about parallel inspections, we were bringing guys from bashes, packing groceries at bashes into the system. But now, since everybody seems to enjoy Arizona, we're getting some very talented people from out of state here, that this rule is more of a hindrance than a help.
Right.
All right?
Right.
So for that person or that group of people, we having another way in, as far as I'm concerned, would be an advantage to our industry,
yeah,
and to our general public.
If we could just clarify the future agenda item to also include any other requirements or certification for a parallel inspector.
Yes.
Just to look at it a little bit from a bigger view, as opposed to just reciprocity or just, you know, 10, 10, and 10 on the 30 or whatever.
So, Hayden, make that as broad as you can so that we can discuss this entire issue.
Thank you.
Okay?
Good.
All right? And that'll be on a future agenda. So let's move off.
And that would need to be a statutory change. However, you might actually have a fighting chance if that allowed then for the things that you're talking about, a reciprocity situation, a way for someone to come in and be able to get that quicker than it is right now.
Too bad Gilliam fell off so soon.
If you tried to put that in without,
you would have been happy.
Anything like that,
mm-hmm.
The
right.
Legislature would take a hike.
The whole thought is if we had some level of a course they would take or something like that. And
the course man loves the course idea.
Yeah,
somebody
and no
cost even.
No cost.
I presented that before.
But then the idea is maybe we could lower some of the other requirements on the 250 in a 3-year, right?
Well,
we'd have the ability to alter some of that if we wanted to.
I'm not saying to change that, but potentially have.
I'm not happy about going back into that definition. I think if a 250 in 3 years to actually do that, I think is good. And to be the parallel inspector, but to be the candidate, I think we might be able to find a way for the candidate to circumvent the 30 parallel.
Right, but how do we address the parallel inspector who's done 3,000 inspections in New Mexico and
wants to do parallel inspections? He can wait. I mean, it's just that's not supposed to be his primary business. Okay, his primary business is supposed to be home inspections. If he's going into business to be a parallel inspector, I suggest that he wait his 3 years out.
Yeah.
All right.
So for future discussion,
I'm not looking for a shortcut for that guy to get in. And every year, we have more people qualified to do these parallel inspections. Every year,
that could be a good discussion.
Not to me, and I'm the chairman.
Yeah.
Which means you're good at
be sure it's in the general overall so we can beat this thing up again. Okay?
Sounds good.
Moving down to number three, peer review. Means a home. There's no changes on peer review. Moving down to number four, peer reviewer, we want to change 5 to 3, but I thought we did that already.
It didn't happen.
It didn't happen?
So, yeah, that's just to make it the same as the parallel inspector.
Well, do we want to make it the same? Peer review is a whole different ballgame now. I mean, training people to come into the industry or peer review as a disciplinary action for someone who's been in the industry for a long time. Say he's been in the industry for, say, 30 years, and he's got some poor little joker in there with 3 years' experience telling him what to do. Do we want to change 5 to 3 on peer review? Did anyone follow that?
Yeah.
I think you'll have 3 years you'd probably do if you have certification for the parallel inspector. That might be tied to your next month's or the next meeting.
Wait, say that again, Kate. What did you say?
The peer review would also probably fall under a parallel inspector. If they get certified and trained, then the 3 years would work. Otherwise, 5 years is probably right.
The peer reviewer is exactly like the parallel inspector, only
exactly.
His mission is different.
Yeah.
And the only difference in the definition is 3 to 5 years.
Right.
Uh-huh. I'm all for keeping the 5, but...
But 5 was just a random number you used because it took 5 years for you to get up on the board. That's where you came up with your 5, is where you go.
Possibly, I can't remember.
I will just throw out there to say that hoping that we do get to open a rule package, all things considered, you better justify that 5 in a big way because 3 is going to look better and lend itself to helping us open a rule package.
Just to get a rule package open, I would go for 3. But that would be my only reason.
Paul.
And that's taking your advice.
Yeah, no, I'm good on 3.
I mean, I was thinking
five is a high bar. 5 is a high bar. And we don't want it to corrupt the rest of the rules, right?
It seems like the characters, I understand the mission is different, like you just said, Peter, but it seems to me like the qualifications of a peer reviewer basically, based on what's right there, is pretty much identical to a parallel inspector.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it ought to reference that with only a parallel inspector that's been trained.
Mr. Chairman, could you clarify for me, please, the difference between a peer review and a parallel inspector?
Parallel inspector. Well, the actual physical difference is nothing.
Okay.
Except that the person being reviewed is under disciplinary action.
Being reviewed.
Mm-hmm. This is a peer review is the actual disciplinary action that the board required
from an EAC,
possibly from an EAC. Okay, to have the respondent go back out in the field with another home inspector do a home inspection. And that home inspection is then reviewed and beat up, just like a parallel inspection would be, until it meets the standard. Now, the board may require 2, they may require 3, they may require more. And each one of those has to be done, reviewed, corrected, until it meets the standard.
Okay. Is there any requirement for anyone sitting in an EAC as a certified home inspector to also be a peer review? Or can, you know...
That's what I was going to ask. Are peer reviewers EAC members?
I didn't say they have to be.
They're just
no
licensed inspectors.
So they don't have to be.
Anyone
so
who
I
has...
I almost suggest
without any,
get rid of the whole definition of peer reviewer and say home parallel inspectors may also conduct peer reviews. How are they different?
I think...
And they should be a part of an EAC. They should be board approved.
Exactly.
If they are reviewing based on disciplinary actions... They should 100% be EAC board-approved.
Yeah, I guess why not combine them, right?
I don't. I'm not with you 100% because our enforcement advisory committee members have no requirements. all they have to do is show a letter of interest, and Doug's going to throw them onto the list.
Right.
Well, he looks and he makes sure there's no discipline or anything like that, and then they are board approved.
Yeah, but the enforcement advisory committee members do not have to prove 5 years in the business or 3 years in the business. They don't have to prove 250 home inspections. They're just thrown on the committee because I remember that we needed enforcement advisory committee members so bad that we would accept anyone who showed a letter of interest. Now, maybe I'm wrong now, but that's the way it was for years. There's no qualification on an EAC member.
So
we're going to throw that in there, too, for next meeting, EAC member.
Well, there are a few of that I would like to get rid of, yes.
So, what do you mean to meet for?
No.
So, Mr. Chair, you see the value of maintaining the peer review designation because that is a person with an additional level of experience needed to go out and supervise on a disciplinary action.
To supervise an experienced home inspector. This is the difference.
Okay.
That's why I was.
Okay, so there is a place, you know, to maybe not. Not mess that up with the EAC member and a peer review. Maybe that's
I've done several peer reviews. They're not easy to get the respondent to respond to a peer review. Mm. They come already
with an attitude.
Yeah. They're very reluctant to make the changes you ask them to make. Whereas as a parallel inspector, which I've done also, the guys are eager to come. They're eager to learn, and they're eager to make the changes that you ask them to make. You see, so it's a whole different animal from peer review to parallel inspector. Are the qualifications necessary going to be different or need to be different? That's what the debate is. And I just feel for the poor peer reviewer that if he has a different designation than parallel inspector, he might have a little bit more clout and get things done a little bit quicker with his respondent. But we can debate that anytime.
I just messaged.
But as far as enforcement advisory committee members, do we want them to have some type of qualification? We should. Is it that important? I don't think so, because we have to have a quorum there too, and that generally gets
someone else
generally can straighten them out, although I've seen that not happen. And on the but as far as peer reviewers or parallel inspectors having to be enforcement advisory committee members, I don't see the advantage to that either. Now what you're doing is asking them to do a lot more work. Enforcement advisory committee members
have to
do
anything.
A lot more
work.
They
can say
no if
they're called.
Yes, but everybody will say no. All right.
A lot of people,
well.
I mean, if you're in the middle of something big and you can't do it, you say no. That's why they got a big pool, right?
But the type of inspector is really pretty much the same, and experience level is pretty much the same for the parallel inspector and the peer review. We're still looking for someone who has a level of experience who can oversee and supervise.
The only difference was the 5 year to 3 year. Okay, let the record show that Roger is now here in physically here.
Oh, stairs and then I had to find the elevator.
Glad you made it, okay.
Very good, Roger.
So does it make sense to keep those separate? You're saying the only difference is 3 or 5 year between parallel inspector and peer review inspector. Does it make sense to maintain that separation or just combine them?
So Doug just messaged me back that there's no requirement for them to be EAC members, which Kurt said, and they just have to attest that they meet the requirements and definition, which I'm looking at that and I'm like, what is the difference?
Yeah, we have EAC members that have less than a year experience.
Right now. Anyone who shows up to the building alive will be put on an EAC committee member.
Mm-hmm. However, to do parallels, you have to have 250 hours.
You might have to check.
The difference between peer reviewer and parallel inspector is simply that they know their jobs. So if you want to pull peer reviewer into parallel inspector, I do recommend that you double name it. Okay. Parallel inspector, peer reviewer.
I don't know if you remember, Peter, maybe David. I feel like these were actually created very recently, maybe like 2018, these definitions, because they were jumbled together before and they didn't make a lot of sense and they were confusing. What's a reviewer? What's an inspector, parallel inspector? It didn't jive in the old version, and so they were broken out like this, so there's no confusion with each one does.
That is true. Actually, it was staff who made us put these definitions together because they were saying that the definition of a parallel inspector talks about it and now an applicant, but now a candidate, whereas the definition of a peer reviewer talks about a respondent or a certified home inspector. So
basically the same person that claims to be a peer reviewer there's nothing in there that, except for the 2 extra years, I guess.
Stipulation.
2 years and the guy that he's dealing with. Up here, the parallel inspector means the certified home inspector supervises parallel inspections for a home inspector candidate. Whereas down here, the peer reviewer means a peer reviewer means an Arizona certified home inspector performing peer review inspections for a home inspector subject to ordered board discipline. They're two different animals.
But if Kurt has the exact same, he's a home inspector, and he has done 250 and been registered for 5 years, he can do either one. The only difference is 2 years, right?
Right.
I mean, you're saying in what they do, but it does. I can ask him to be a peer reviewer or to be a parallel, either way.
Seems like it's the same requirements. Why not combine them?
What are you going to call it?
Well, who cares? But either
it
may not
be two separate.
Because
that's what confused staff. Well, does this parallel inspector, if he's working with a candidate, you're going to have to say that he does parallel inspections with candidates and can do peer reviews with respondents. You know, you'll have to change your whole definition. I would leave it that alone.
I have a question. Maybe, is Doug on the line?
I don't think so.
Yep.
Are you there? Oh, thank goodness.
Hey,
okay.
Doug. I don't know if you remember these changes. Do you recall having lots of issues with the definition of peer reviewer before the change or after? Just regarding, I guess, anyway, why this was kind of put through. Do you remember that?
No, I mean, the peer reviewer definition came in after parallel. I mean, parallels have been around for a long time. But peer review, the notion of doing peer reviews is part of a disciplinary
That's exactly right. We've had if I can interject, this is Peter. You know, we had parallels long before we had peer reviews,
right.
And the peer review came in once we started in enforcement advisory committee meetings, started talking about peer review as a disciplinary action, which also was relatively new. Before we never did peer reviews as a disciplinary action. Now that we do them, we identified it, and then we identified the person that could do it.
I have no problem with that. That's completely logical. But those definitions are not. They don't put a greater weight or anything else on the peer reviewer, other than right now that it's
other than two more years.
That's it.
It almost doesn't make sense. You're really looking at the same skill level, same discipline, you will, of the certified home inspector to oversee a parallel
and
versus do a peer review.
Is there something wrong with that?
I don't think so.
Have a peer reviewer who's equal to a parallel inspector. However, today I'm the parallel inspector doing parallel inspections. Tomorrow I'm the peer reviewer doing peer reviews.
And then the next day you're a certified home inspector.
Or an EAC committee member.
Right.
But what's wrong with having the two definitions? They're already in the rules.
There's nothing wrong per se, but I do think that the 5 to 3 years is
there's a little ambiguity there.
Move to make. And then I also think, and look at Peter, my perspective on this is the moratorium that's put into place every single January from the governor's office that says if you even want to think about a rule, you have to remove three, right? So if there's any way to make this clear and concise and accomplish the same goal with it being clear, then I'm all for that. So what we're basically saying is that the peer reviewer is a parallel inspector, it's the same one and the same, then, you know, just maybe consider under the parallel inspector having, you know, may peer conduct reviews. Peer reviews or disciplinary actions.
Yeah.
One sentence and the rest of that is
gone. Right.
I was going to ask Doug again, if peer reviewer, the whole thing about it was X'd, would that even prevent us from having somebody review something based on a consent agreement or something?
Yeah, I mean,
do we need that definition
to do
that?
Peer, quote unquote, peer. Do you have a specific list of peer reviewers for home inspector disciplinary actions that you go to if they're required to have peer reviews?
No, we allow the respondent to choose their own peer reviewer. And, you know, we collect the affidavit from the peer reviewer, you know, that they attest that they meet the definition.
That's right.
So how's that?
Peer review. And we check that out to make sure that
so you get to pick your
choose
own
your own.
The home inspector who's on
the
home inspector who is under disciplinary action is responsible to grab a peer reviewer with the proper qualifications to review his work. Okay, the person that he picks, all right, the board doesn't force anybody on him. The person that he picks has to sign his attestation, or which would probably be, or affidavit that he meets these qualifications. Staff checks out that he does meet these qualifications, and he can be the guy's peer reviewer. You're looking for someone to straighten this guy out, and then he has to sign. The peer reviewer, which is something different from the parallel inspector, by the way. The peer reviewer has to.
Saying that, but by definition,
no. But the peer reviewer has to write a report to the board that this respondent met the standard.
What kind of report comes back, Doug?
Not just a signature.
Just an attestation that they have done, completed the peer review, and that the home inspection meets the standards?
Yep.
Or do they write?
We've actually developed a form to standardize that reporting back to the, you know, back to the investigator. You know, it's not anything complicated, but something that attests that the home inspection report that was peer reviewed, you know, does meet practice.
Or it doesn't.
In the same way a parallel inspector would review an inspection and say whether it meets or doesn't meet, and they're reviewing and grading that inspection, right?
Yeah. No, they do that in-house. They're not reviewing and grading it that the board sees. What they're doing is reviewing it and grading it, and then they're writing down on their list, say they did five, they can give one form for even five home inspections. Five parallel inspections that says, yes, this guy met the standard on these. And it's the parallel inspector, it's the candidate, rather, it's responsibility to gather his 30 and send one to the state. The actual
review of the inspection, whether it's peer reviewed or whatever.
I don't know why you're trying to get rid of peer review, because I'm going to tell you this. The more we talk about the peer review and the parallel inspector, the more I see that their jobs are so totally different that to have them under the same vice doesn't work. The parallel inspector doesn't send anything to the board except the fact that he is certified well enough to do the parallel inspection, then he signs a sheet. The peer reviewer has to actually take take the respondent's work and work it to a point where he can ask and tell the board himself that the job was done properly. Whereas the parallel inspector is not telling the board the job was done properly. He's just saying, this guy did 30 parallels with me, and that's that. The parallel inspector is responsible for his own work, where the respondent in a peer review is not. The candidate for an application is responsible for his own work. The respondent is not, when it comes to peer review. The peer reviewer is. The board gets information from two different places. Now, just because their qualifications are exactly the same doesn't mean that we should not identify who they are.
Their qualifications aren't the same. That's the point.
Well, I don't mind changing to 3 to 5, and well, that would make it the same.
Look at what you have up there for parallel inspector. He's got to have 250 hours plus
250 inspections.
Or 250, yeah. Down here, all he has to do is be a licensed inspector for 3 years. Doesn't say anything about disciplinary action, doesn't say anything. So you got to have a standard set.
Well, it has that, doesn't it?
It has it all. Home inspector, the Arizona certified home inspector, subject to board order,
subject to discipline, yeah.
Blah, 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 analysis review.
So it needs to be 3 years then.
So let me ask, Mr. Chair. This is Paul Starin. David Schwartz, do you see the benefit from maintaining separate definitions for a parallel inspector and peer reviewer?
Well, I don't know. I can see both sides of it. I think if you make the requirements stiffer for a parallel inspector at all, it just worsens the condition of shortages of people perhaps doing those. That's one concern. And then they are, I agree with Peter, they are, they're separate roles entirely. Having the two names is, has some value, but you know, if we're doing it as an exercise to get through over the hurdle of what the governor imposes on changing a rule, then I hadn't really thought through that and how that plays there. So that's you guys' call, I guess.
Yeah. It is a little interesting that, I mean, there is no 250 fee paid for the peer reviewer, but there is, right?
It's later.
It's number 4, not number 3.
Oh, it's in 4. Okay,
yeah,
sorry.
Same
okay,
exact.
Okay, yeah. So, so I guess maybe the bigger question is, are we staying with the 3-year, 5-year, or are we going to be, you know, 3-year, 3-year?
I agree with Judith when she says that in order to justify it, they should be the same as far as the qualifications go. So I have no problem with changing 5 to 3. Okay? I also have no problem with changing parallel inspector and peer reviewer and combining them into one definition. But it's going to have to be reworked as far as wordsmithing goes. The whole paragraph is going to have to meet. And we did this.
Paragraphs are so similar.
But we did this before. I mean, it's just going to what it's going to do is it's just going to elongate the definition to include candidates and disciplinary action on both sides. And if you feel,
I don't elongate it too much, Peter. It's, they're almost identical. So we'll play with it and present something to you to consider, and you know, and see if it's worth considering. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm. And put it on the next agenda?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And therefore we'll let staff do that?
Yep.
Staff will do that for us?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then we'll beat that up at the next meeting and see whether or not that works. Okay?
Challenge
accepted. Truce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now also down at peer reviewer, we're changing affidavit to attestation. No one has any problem with that. And criterion to criteria. Is that the proper?
So there was a single criteria, huh? Not multiple? Is that it?
Right.
These criteria.
Yeah.
I guess that is plural.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that's like fascia. And we're going to talk about that. Fascia.
Don't get me going, Peter.
Well, fascia is one of those words where fascia is also singular and plural.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And so I think that's what you got with criteria.
Is it fascia or fascia?
Well, if you want it to be fascia, is it Wayne's coating or Wayne's
cotton? Moving on.
Is it fascia or fascia?
Number, okay, if no one has any other questions with peer reviewer, we'll move along to number 5. Report checklist supplement. We have it as a tool designed to assist home inspector candidates and applicants, parallel inspectors, peer reviewers, application reviewers, enforcement advisory evaluators, and certified home inspectors when reviewing. We're taking out or filling out an application for home inspector certification. but we'll move that to when reviewing or completing a home inspection report.
Yeah, I think it's a good change.
The report checklist supplement is not a substitute for the current version of the standards of professional practice. Discussion. We want to, of course, candidates is new, but we have N applicants, but isn't the applicant a candidate? Shouldn't we be pulling applicants out of there?
No, because it seems like a very broad definition of who uses a report checklist supplement. It could be a candidate before they apply. They've applied, now they're an applicant, so they may be using that tool.
And then others. We went with that because of the original, you can do your parallel inspections, but they're doing those before they're an actual applicant, before they're submitted.
So candidate's good.
And also, you know what, a lot of the discussion that Kurt and I had about these items were because of the impending online transition. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, like filling out, completing, you know what I mean? Because everything's going to go online. So.
And that makes applicant good.
And, sorry?
Yeah, that's good.
So, applicant, so for instance, again, back to those parallels. So, once you go to the online process, you know, you'll make your online profile and you can start an application, maybe not finish it. It's not considered an application submitted to the board until you hit submit. So you might start filling it out and not until you're finished and everything's done and you hit submit. Mm-hmm. Then it's an application with board staff.
Good.
What's that supposed to happen?
Okay.
In the next, hopefully before the end of this calendar year.
Right.
We're working with it.
Okay, so candidates, good. So the change is actually filling out an application for home inspector certification, and changing that phrase to completing a home inspection report. So in essence, it would read, all those people, evaluators and certified home inspectors, when reviewing or completing a home inspection report.
Which makes more sense than just the application.
It's so much cleaner.
That's a good change.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody have any problems with that, Roger?
Well, we have this highlighted discussion of this item report checklist supplement from Judith.
Yeah, I don't think I want to discuss it now.
Okay.
That's not
okay.
fair.
All right.
That's not fair. Okay. The anybody have any problems with number five? No? Okay, what's going on R-430-247?
Okay. So R-430-247 had an A, a B, and a C subsection. So basically, A and C were listing what needs to be part of an application, but they were separated for whatever reason, and then B was put in between them. B talks about pools and spas, which to me has nothing to do with certification and goes down to professional conduct. Further down, I think that's 303, with the normal SOP. So you should have the SOP, the pools and spas SOP, under the same rule, and not under home inspector certification. And so I took A and C, took C, put it on top of A because it has more general information requirements, social security address for an application, with A underneath that, and then taking B completely out and putting it under professional conduct. That's what happened, and that's why it looks the way it does.
And that's because when we added the pool and spa 10 years ago, that's how that piece got fitted in there?
That's what I think.
I believe that's what happened, how that happened there. So you're just moving the sections around.
There are some changes in the language under A. For instance, I don't know if you can see it from my screen here, under number 4, detailed explanatory statement regarding, I added in within 5 years to a number of them, just because that's one of the issues we've had, is that if you had a DUI 20 years ago, based on the current rules, you're going to go before the board, period. But this, by adding in 5 years, it's over 5 years old, hopefully you won't have to tell us about it, and it doesn't have to go before the board.
Ooh, that's a big one.
So.
Well, this is an issue. Yeah, we need to look at all over the place. So if we can do anything right here for home inspectors, it's great.
So it currently, this is the current
No.
Verbiage. No.
No, no.
This is all proposed.
This is all proposed. Anything the blue underlined is... Okay. I had taken the beginning of this, used to be C, with maybe some additions and other things
okay.
on my part.
So, but there was no five-year previous, right? There was just, and anywhere, there was no statute of limitations kind of thing on that. Okay,
correct.
Okay,
there was for a felony, though.
Yeah, I think that one did not change. I think you're correct in saying that.
Okay.
There is one comment in here on number six, A6. Evidence of having a valid fingerprint clearance card issued pursuant to Title 41, Chapter 12, Article 3, 1, with a comment that says, can we talk about the possibility of requiring them to maintain this valid fingerprint card? What would it take to maintain a valid fingerprint card?
You have to get it renewed every
six years.
Right, and is that time and money?
For them.
Right.
Yeah.
That's my point.
But, you know,
I passed my fingerprint card 22 years ago.
And that's the problem.
Why?
So, because if we're supposed to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public, mm-hmm. and I can tell you this is something that the Auditor General's office will come in and say, what are you doing? So yeah. I'll say, oh, yeah, well, this guy, you know, passed the fingerprint clearance card 20 years ago, and we don't know anything now. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess you could, we do run background checks. But the point is, mm-hmm. this is something that came up with another board, and the Auditor General's office was not favorable with that at all. And so I was talking to Kurt and Angeli about how, you know, recently other agencies and you know, if you think about home inspectors, I mean,
we're in the house.
You're in the house. And so, like, school bus drivers, there's a lot of professions that they require you maintain a valid active fingerprint clearance card. So every 6 years, it's, I think, $67 or $66, something like that.
I think it's a great idea.
And it's just, it's like a due diligence thing showing that.
Do we require that of architects and engineers?
They don't even have to submit any fingerprint clearance cards.
But alarm agents, we're not the alarm industry,
alarm
we do.
Alarm industry and home inspectors do. I have no idea why the other guys don't.
Home inspectors know in someone's house.
We're in the house.
So you guys are all okay with...
Yeah.
The all these grandfathered people that we grandfathered in 20 years ago having to go out and get a fingerprint card now.
Why not?
You're going out on my committee.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. That would be a tough one to sell. I mean, you know, it'd be an uphill battle. I'm not saying it's not worthy.
I don't think it would be tough.
I'm just saying it's
for...
you're raising the bar, and you're requiring someone, okay, you've got 3 months, 6 months to renew your...
to go get a fingerprint.
Yeah, you're just...
Because these guys haven't done it in years.
Yeah.
Unless they're carrying a CCW, which most of them are. But the truth is, they for the board, they haven't been printed since they put their application in.
Right.
And we discussed this
a long time ago. Let's ask them to take the test again, too.
Well,
fingerprint clearance card is not like...
I'm
exaggerating.
Years ago, we used to do you guys had to put in a fingerprint card. Like, you had to go down, do the whole ink thing, and send it to
the police station.
Now it's just a fingerprint clearance card. I can tell you the turnaround for that's like 10 days.
Yeah.
I mean, go to one of those places, you have a reader, which can't have the thing.
And once you have it, every year you renew, if the language is going to be somewhat similar to alarm agents, you renew, here's a copy of my fingerprint clearance card. It's good. If it's like the alarms, it would be good for 6 years. That's at least five renewals that you're saying, here's my card, it's still there. We go through our DPS website. If there's a hit on your fingerprint clearance card, DPS lets us know. So, and that's the important thing, is just that we know when something happens, when it happens, and not waiting every renewal cycle.
This is a big change here.
This is a major change.
Yeah.
And to sell it to the industry, we're going to need to put that item in particular on an agenda and get it out to the industry, and you'll see what kind of response we have with that.
Well, it's the health and safety of the community that you got to consider. It's not the home inspector.
Well, home inspectors are part of the general public. You need to understand that this is a two-way street. What you're doing is putting another burden on the home inspectors when we actually have enough burdens in the rules and standards as it is.
What's the worst case scenario? You have a violation, go in front of the board.
I'm just saying that what you're doing is you're putting time and money again on the home inspector. It might be a 6-year fee, it might be $10,
But the fact is, it's going to meet resistance. Not from me. I couldn't care. I get fingerprinted every, I don't know, 5 years. But from the industry. And we're trying to get people to get into this industry quicker. Okay? Look, I'm just being the devil's advocate here, but one, I can promise you there's going to be blowback on this.
Yeah. If I could say, we currently do require the fingerprint clearance card when you apply. The only difference is that we don't check on it after that happens. Mm-hmm. And
that's why I brought this up, because for me it didn't make sense that we're requiring it at time of application, but then we never check it again once they're certified.
Right. So, if I may,
I agree.
So, the Office of Pest Management, through the Department of Ag, is now requiring that the pest applicators, as I am one of, and QPs now have to, for new applicants, have to go through, and I think it's DPS, but they have to get their fingerprint cards too. So, there's an increased consumer concern and awareness on this, which we have to be sensitive to. And understanding, you know, that there's going to be resistance to it, and we need to be able to justify it. But this is a big thing that we need to separately agendize and talk about, and not necessarily within the confines, I don't think, of today's agenda. But it's a big important thing we need to bite off on. We got a bunch of SOPs and stuff to look at here, but
we do.
This is a
thing. This needs to be re-agendized, okay? And we're talking about, I see no problems with any of these others. However, we are talking about, it's R43247, changes number 6, I believe it was. Yes, A6. I'm going to say right off as a final on that, I'm a firm believer in government, a firm anti-government overreach, okay? And this seems like government overreach to me. If you want, now I'm just saying, this is it. What you're doing is you're actually going back to over 400 home inspectors in the industry and asking them to do something they've never had to do for 20 years. That, to me, is government overreach. So I'm going to go on record as saying that, okay? And then, of course, it's a committee decision and then a board decision. But we're going to, let's agendize it and let's talk about it, okay?
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other rules we want to talk about?
Yeah,
there?
Any other big changes here?
I mean, the whole thing is a lot of big changes. If you guys want to focus on your SOP, that's fine. This is not going to be just a one-day discussion. It's not going to be – it's going to take a while to get through this. And this was – like Judith said, we want – if we're going to make any kind of changes to the rules, we might as well look through the whole thing and see what we can do. And that's what staff had done. I know you guys have your SOP still to look at.
I thought you said you were just moving things up and down in here, no? There's been some...
Yeah, all the blue is new, so I haven't really digested all of that, but...
maybe it's best that you guys...
I don't think the blue is new.
No.
You moved it from...
Not all the blue is new?
How it would look in a rule package, that's how it would look, is that it looks like it's new text, but really it's a copy and paste from C.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
But there are little changes here and there within that, such as adding the 5 years to a number of those things. The language regarding the fingerprint card is taken directly from another rule that we had. A and C each talked about fingerprint. One talked about fingerprint cards, and the other one talked about fingerprint clearance cards. So the fingerprint cards had to go, because we don't even accept those anymore. So they need to be taken out. So there are there's little changes throughout, but mostly it was a copy and paste from C. When you get down to, you'll see B when that's all scratched out. We have the new, there's lots of changes.
We can come back to that.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, if this is the time And it gets also back with what Mr. Gabor had sent in for concern regarding parallel inspections and defining really on item 17 there in the blue, the dwelling units, and trying to get back to that. We do need to kind of hit that at some point here, I think, today, and that got back to Brick's concern. I know we did discuss some parallel inspection with definitions already, which were kind of sort of still on the agenda for, but anyway, deciding what a dwelling unit is and what's acceptable on a parallel needs to be discussed at some point to clarify that, Mr. Chair.
If I could say, Paul.
Yeah.
So with, I guess it's 16 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
So I had kind of like two options. The first one was in 16. Where is it? Oh, the applicant shall, and that whole part there could be crossed out, conduct these inspections in separate residential dwelling units and shall, or you can try to define it further below what a separate residential dwelling is. Is kind of how staff is going. It's like either you cross it out and then you just defer to the statute's definition of a home inspection,
mm-hmm.
or you have to define what this separate residential dwelling is. And the more we were doing that, the more it just seemed to get really clunky, really... I think it overcomplicates things when you try to say this is what you can do and can't do with it.
Right, but this is not already defined in state law, as Mr. Gabor reminded us of on his email?
And that's a question I had too, is that I know that falls under tenant and owner under property, and I don't know if it's overarching on ours or not. That's a question I wanted to ask Scott Donald about.
I make a suggestion we take the home inspection definitions and rules all to another agenda. There's just too many changes in here. There's too many cross-outs. We need to do our homework on this, Paul. We need to tear this apart and then come back into a meeting prepared for this. Roger, are you prepared for this?
No.
I'm not either. There's just so much of it.
Okay.
We were assuming...
No, I can... Talk about standards.
Yeah, we want to move this to a new agenda. Take the entire, what item is this? Item number?
I think it's D.
5D. If we can take item number 5D to a future agenda. Okay? And drop it for now. Anybody have any problems with that?
No, we just want to make sure it includes that definition of what constitutes a home inspection, and whether it's a single family dwelling or residential dwelling unit,
that's all in there.
As long as it's all in there, yeah. We can hit it.
Okay.
That's all in there. Anyone need a break before we get into the standards going
reading
back to
my
5A?
Mind.
Yeah,
okay, let's take a 5 minute.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Back into our meeting. And I lost my agenda. Hang on a second. We're going to go to 5. Let me just slide this up. All right. I want to talk about 5A. The home inspector standards of professional practice revisions are ongoing. I'm going to take the lead on this. We're almost there. We have got David Schwartz has some input on primary function. Now hold off, David. We read that primary function. We want to. David's got is very interested in being sure that we don't get wrapped up in all these minor clocks and timers and different things on appliances, since we have appliances in here. So the very first thing I want to do is go to the definition of primary function, back in the glossary page. We have a definition that says. Primary function, the function of a device that is most reasonably apparent, such as heat provided at elements or burners, at the stove or oven, but not added features such as induction, convection, air fryers, and other characteristics.
Such as?
Okay, this is in David's.
Oh, David's.
Okay. I have no problem with the definition, except it's forgetting about the small things. If you're going to be talking about stove and oven, then I think we should start off with clocks and timers, maybe clean cycles, and then go into the larger things such as induction, convection, and air fryers and other characteristics, so that we all understand that we're talking about elements, burners, and nothing more. Comments?
If I could
this is Dave Swartz, if it's okay. I have a comment on that. This is the equivalent of giving one example that would be most closely aligned with the primary feature of a stove or oven, which is to, you know, heat up food. And then the intent is that it's a given that all those other ancillaries are not included. And so you could go on with a massive list if you wanted, but it's still an example. So go ahead and talk about that, maybe.
Well, and Mr. Chair, and Mr. Swartz, there is a precedent for citing examples within definitions. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Or are we breaking ground here?
Yeah. No, you're right. They do it instead of saying examples are or whatever, it's such as.
Right.
It's the beginning of that component.
Okay. So the reason, obviously, is for clarification, especially as we're getting into kitchen appliances, but it's not, the definition certainly is not limited to kitchen appliances. It could go into other components in the standards. It could go into even pools and spas. All right, so we're talking about a more generic definition here beyond just for kitchen appliances, right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
I would prefer to see this written as the function of a device that is most reasonably apparent, such as heat provided at elements or burners at a stove, but not added features such as, and throw a couple of small ones in, clocks, timers, induction, convection, air fryers, and other characteristics, just to be sure that your primary function is defined for to cover big things and little things that are not part of the primary. But if you like it the way that it's written, I can go with that.
No, that's a good thought. That's a good point you make, is that kind of makes it clear that both small and perhaps what somebody would consider a large attribute are just outside of what a home inspector is able to check.
So,
yeah, thanks.
Clocks and timers, clocks, timers, induction, convection. And I'd be happy with that. I think that self-cleaning and obviously doesn't need to be in there. It would be included. Any comment on it? You good?
Yeah, I'm good with
maybe
that.
Maybe or
only
or
that
clocks or timers or and either one of those. Those are the same, aren't they? Clocks, timers, a little bit the same. They're all through the clock feature, but thermostats. Clocks, thermostats, or something like that.
How about temperature settings, maybe?
Yeah, good thought.
Clocks, timers, temperature settings. Yeah, that'll work. Clocks, take out timers, temperature settings. Okay.
But we do need to see where else specifically we do want to apply the definition to make sure that our scope of the def is where we need it to
good.
Be. Because right now it's all kitchen centric, right?
Right.
Well,
I was thinking the temperature settings, that could be a this is Roger Skaggs.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a pool heater or something.
Yeah, there's a thermostat on an HVAC system as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to exclude on one line and then include on the other.
Well, we don't worry about the temperature settings on thermostats either. I mean, with the internal calibration.
Well, the calibration. Mm-hmm. I know that is a word we might want to use.
Might be a good word to put in there. Such as clocks, calibration, temperature settings.
Well, yeah, no. We're going to end up with a real long paragraph. We keep
maybe
there.
I know. It's like, where do you stop with this?
That's let's hold that.
Such as.
Let's hold the primary function definition right there, and let's go through and see if we need to add things. Let's go to purpose and scope. 2.2C3 by David's. This is a new one. You only want to move four, three to four. Kurt, move three to four and make space for a number three in 2.2C. Okay.
And just to explain where that comes from is that for all the years, and I just did another EAC interview, and over all the years, there's just been the use of the word inspected as a condition for each of these line items of the standards or any other items that are included within the inspection. And it's just, it's always been ambiguous. The public has a right to non-ambiguous reporting, whether people want to say good.
Okay, David. Now, I do have a problem with this statement. Are you okay, David?
Okay,
I do have a problem with this statement. We're looking for the condition, which is an observation, but we're calling it a condition description. So we can't use the word description in there. Description is a type. Observation is a condition. I would rather this say something more to, and also that provides a condition description is really redundant. Who's on the line here? Do we know who's doing that? I would rather this statement say, to state the condition of systems and components so inspected with reasonably unambiguous terminology such as satisfactory repair and repair needed. I don't think you need that provided condition description, because a condition description is, the word description is actually a type in our standards, and that provides a condition description when you're stating the condition, it's redundant.
That sounds good.
Okay, so I would just pull that part of that out. Let's see what Kurt wrote here. State the condition of systems and components so inspected with reasonably unambiguous terminology that provides a condition description. Take out that provides a condition and with unambiguous terminology, take out that, and we'll put in commas such as satisfactory or repair needed. I think that's more straightforward.
Reasonably unambiguous. Reasonably unambiguous.
Now, this is where we get into the fight.
Whose reasoning are we considering here? I just get nervous with the wording with these.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. Well, now that we got it down to what we're trying to say, we've
right.
got to deal with reasonably unambiguous.
We also have the option of removing reasonably and ambiguous, and just to see if it works without those two. And so inspected with terminology such as. But what are your thoughts, David? This is Paul.
Well, I know that the word reasonable is somewhat clearly defined in law. That, so that's why I inserted that word.
Okay.
And then I was searching around for, you know, something to refer to clarity or lack of clarity, and unambiguous was about the best synonym I could find.
Yeah.
So,
well, there you go. What about the word clear? If we were to say so inspected with clear terminology, would that make more sense? All right, we don't like
I'm
that.
I'm okay with that. I started there, and then I kind of rotated around, so we all know what we're striving for.
Yeah.
Unambiguous is not open to more than one interpretation, which sounds pretty good. Clear is easy to perceive, understand, interpret.
Want to have Scott weigh in?
So clear is more ambiguous than unambiguous. No. Okay.
So unambiguous is pretty good.
It's pretty good. How about...
But reasonably, I don't
know. Here's the definition of unambiguous. It is not open to more than one interpretation.
Well, then do we need reasonably?
Maybe not. Maybe we don't need reasonably.
So inspected with unambiguous terminology?
I like that.
I like it. I like it better, Peter.
Good job.
Yeah.
Okay.
There, it's gone.
Let's remove the
comma, such as satisfactory or repair needed. Okay. Now, that takes care of number three. We're gonna move over to number, okay, we're looking at 3.2B8. I believe that we're highlighted here just because we have a capital and installed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we want to pull the capital out of installed. You with us, Kurt? Because I can't see what you're doing.
B8. You're on B8. Determine the effectiveness of any system installed or...
System installed, yeah. Okay, you already took it out. Okay, so it wasn't... And 9, we have expectancy, future conditions. There was too much of a space there.
And since we're right here, there's something that I found.
Go ahead.
Okay. Number 7.
Back up to 7.
Yeah, 3.2B7.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like some redundancy here. Electromagnetic fields, and then just the next line it says... electromagnetic radiation. I mean, is there a difference? And if so, I mean, do we still need both of those in this particular paragraph?
The inspector
showed... I think electromagnetic radiation came from such as around a microwave oven, and the electromagnetic fields are overhead power lines, but I think you're right in that they're really the same thing. So maybe the electromagnetic, neither one of them.
Maybe we could lose the radiation. If it's just for the microwave oven, how important is that to be in there, determine the presence?
What if we said electromagnetics? Would that cover it all?
What if we just remove electromagnetic radiation and just leave electromagnetic fields in there?
Yeah, because that's what we're really talking about. The electromagnetic...
It just seems there's two different things that are covering the same thing. So.
Yes, they seem to be.
Okay.
Well, they're meant to cover two different things, but if the radiation piece is just for the microwave,
I'm still creating a field, though, right?
Why don't we just take out electromagnetics in front of radiation and leave radiation and then do electromagnetic fields?
Actually, that's not a bad thought.
Because radiation could come from various places.
Now we're into radon land, Peter. Now we're into radon. Here we go.
Okay. So if we were to have this read limited to toxins, fungus, molds, and mold spores, mildew, radon, radiation, carcinogens, noise, electromagnetic fields, hazardous waste, contaminants in buildings, components, soils, water, and air, would that make you happy?
That would make me happy.
Yeah, okay. How about you, Paul?
Yeah, no, that's good.
David?
That's good.
Good stuff.
Okay.
Thanks, Roger.
All right. So now we're gonna jump down to 9. You got to take the space out between future and expectancy. That it's printing out. It's printing out with a big space in there, and somebody caught that.
Oh, this one here hasn't been formatted. This particular one.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's all right.
So
it's all right.
Okay. So we'll go down to 13, where we have. This is 3.2B13, where we have inspect any system component or any non-primary function that is not included in these standards. I have no problems with that. Anybody else?
We never needed to find inspect, did we?
Inspect?
Inspect.
Well, the whole premise is inspectors shall
Right.
You know?
I just want to make sure it's not in defs. I just want to make sure that we don't need it in there. Right?
Yeah, we don't use it elsewhere.
We don't use it anywhere else.
Okay, so the inspector is not required to...
No. Inspect is our observe.
Yeah, right, but we don't really use it in our SOPs here.
Should we change the word?
Yeah,
we have to. Shows up, should we change it to observe?
It doesn't show up in a lot of places, but 3.2, this is inspector is not required to observe is what we normally
right.
use. Observe any system component or non-primary function that is not included in the standards. Yeah, that should be observe.
And then italicize that, right?
Yeah, that's right. Observe italicized.
First word in that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did we get it? It's not required to. Where are you at? 13?
I guess along those same lines, okay. You guys similarly not like number 11, the word evaluate. It's kind of similar to inspect, really.
Well, no, we got lots of words in here. We got operate, we got determine, we've got, you know, offer, we got calculate. I don't see any problem with evaluate.
Yeah.
It's just that inspect.
Okay, cool.
Inspect becomes a problem
because we're
because
it does have to do with acoustic characteristics. Maybe evaluate makes sense there.
Okay,
yeah, you're right.
Now we're going to run down all the way. Whoop.
Where are you going now, Peter?
We did 13. We're going to run to. Hang on. Here we go. 8.3.
Oh, quite a way.
Yeah, there was no other changes. 8.3E2. 8.3E2.
I did that first one, alarm systems, because it says security right before that.
Right.
And then intercom is just, I don't think it needs the S at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can see the others. I added electronic controls and then connectivity, like any kind of Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or whatever devices tend to be controlled by electronically through the air by magic.
Okay, I like it, but I think we can shorten it. I think you got systems in there too many times. If we had this to read telephone, security, cable TV, intercom, auto video, and home network systems, electronic controls, or other ancillary wiring, blah, blah, blah. If we put the systems
That's
in
good.
Once after all of those systems, I think you would be better off. So telephone, security, cable TV, intercom, audio video, home network systems. Put systems in there, mm-hmm. comma, electronic controls, mm-hmm. or other ancillary wiring. Connectivity, I hope we don't have to define that, or any component that is, and we have to get our verbs proper in there too, not part of the primary electrical distribution system.
I think it's components are, isn't it?
Or any components that are, yeah, that's right, that's what you got. But does that flow well? Systems, electronic controls, or other ancillary wiring connectivity, or any components that are not part of the primary electrical. Yeah, I like it. For some reason, I kicked the S off of components and put is in there. I don't know why. And do we need any? Or, yeah. Yeah, okay. So what's it read?
Well, kind of clunky.
Yeah. I like that term, clunky.
Telephone, security, cable TV, intercom, auto, video, home network systems.
So if we're going to exclude alarm systems, does that include, you know, fire alarms or smoke alarms?
Well, that's dealt with somewhere else. Only if it's part of the security system is it excluded in this case.
Right.
But that's separately addressed in electrical.
Fire alarms?
Smokies.
Smokies are with fire alarms.
You're talking fire suppression? Or
no, that would be in plumbing, right?
Well, yeah, that'd be in plumbing.
Okay, I didn't know. Okay.
All right.
Let's see if this works, Peter.
Okay, read it.
Security, cable TV, intercoms, audio, video, systems. So systems is grouped together. Electronic controls or other ancillary. They're not part of the primary electrical system.
Do we need the connectivity piece in there? Ancillary wiring connectivity? Is that important to have in there, I guess?
What do you mean by connectivity, David?
Yeah, are you in Wi-Fi land, or what was your thoughts there?
Yeah, any kind of Wi-Fi connection, Bluetooth connection, or whatever the future might hold with regard to that.
It wouldn't be included in home network systems?
Say there's an AC unit or a thermostat for the HC unit that, in fact, I have one in my house. Well, we're not responsible for the connectivity of that device kind of thing. I just think it provides some clarity. We could, since the word's kind of weird, maybe we could say wireless connection. Wireless connection, wireless connectivity, or something like that. So that, because it's a weird standalone word.
Yeah, and not everybody knows what connectivity is.
Yeah.
So maybe let's reword that a little bit. But I think the spirit is right in that it needs to be. The word home network.
Connection?
Yeah, we want to. We mentioned the word either wireless or Wi-Fi or something having to do with referring to the internet, because we're talking about a phone app that might be needed to control like an AC system. Right?
So we're going into another system. So if we put home network systems, wireless systems, electronic controls, and pull out connectivity, would that work? Because you got several kinds of wireless systems.
I know, this is just so much.
So, home network / wireless system, or?
Home network / wireless systems. Or home, how about wireless home network systems?
Yeah, I guess it's an attempt to, refrigerators are connected to these anymore. You know, everything's connected. So whatever device it is in the home that is possibly within our scope, we're not responsible for its ability to communicate with your phone while you're in Bangladesh, you know. It's just, we want that connectivity out of our scope. Not something we could verify.
We really want to refer to the internet here, and more than just a home-based network, but Wi-Fi. But I'm hesitant to put a term like Wi-Fi in here that may not last 20 years. Like we want these standards to last.
Yeah. What's going to replace Wi-Fi?
Well, I don't know. There could be another term in 10 years that
Other kind of satellite.
I don't know.
Connection that everybody's tapping into.
Wi-Fi is really what we're talking about.
Let's do it.
Right? Is it inappropriate to actually put WIFI in here? Home network / Wi-Fi systems?
I don't think that's outrageous.
Is that too colloquial here?
I don't think so.
Hard to say, because you can't predict what the future will hold.
Exactly.
I kind of did a search and came up with some terms that, like wireless network connectivity. So that's kind of the link. It's not just the home network, it's the link to the home network. So anything that might plug into that, would be kind of would be somewhat clear that that's not part of our scope. Wireless network connectivity. If that were near home network systems, in the definition maybe.
Wi-Fi is a facility allowing computers, smartphones, or other devices to connect to the internet or communicate with one another wirelessly within a particular area. So that's the definition of Wi-Fi. I mean, it sounds like it'd be reasonable to include.
Yeah.
Looks like a really good definition, frankly, for us.
Yeah.
Smartphones, computers, other devices, it kind of has a broad umbrella on it. So maybe that's a good fit.
I'd go back to home network, Kurt. And home network, comma, Wi-Fi systems. And then leave it alone.
Yeah, sounds good.
And you want to keep electronic controls in there.
We did all that to try to get rid of connectivity, so maybe we should get rid of connectivity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or any components that are not a part of the primary electrical system.
So I guess we need the catch-all at the end of that, right? Just for the stuff we're not thinking of and what's going to come in the future, right? So we have to, I think, have that catch-all in there for the future.
Yep.
Electronics.
Now, the primary electrical system, of course, is line voltage.
Right.
Does the world know what line voltage means? Would it be better to say not part of
primary? We haven't defined it in here. Does it know what primary electrical distribution is? That's the question.
not part of the...
Yeah. Primary electrical distribution, that's pretty clear. We're talking about turning the lights on in the house, right?
Yeah, leave it alone.
That's pretty clear.
I agree.
I'm just going to take one last... pass at this here. Observe telephone security, cable TV, intercoms, audio, video, home network, Wi-Fi systems, comma, electronic controls or other ancillary wiring, or but there's a lot of ors in there, or any other component that is not okay. I guess we can have two ors in there, huh, Kurt? Two ors in the water?
Let's see here.
Well, you generally have to have two ors in the water.
Yeah, I guess if it's not too clunky, it's still clunky.
Yes.
It's clunky.
It's a big long
But list. I think it gets the job done. It's just not pretty.
Telephone security, cable TV, intercom, audio, video.
I can't think of how to make it better right now.
Well, I was thinking, since they're all low voltage electrical components and systems, we already have it covered in number one, 8.3E1. Maybe it should be a such as.
You're right.
Maybe it should be a such as, and leave it alone like that. Take two out. We are missing a three, and we went right to a four. I see you already took care of that. Yet, do you think it should be observe one, low voltage electrical components and systems, such as? Or should we leave it in as it's separate?
I think we should limit the such as's. I really do.
I'm in agreement.
Because then you what do you leave in? What do you leave out on the such as's?
Exactly.
It's just messy.
Okay.
We do that if we really need to, like in defs or something.
So you like the one and the two. I have no problems with that. And we're on 8.3. Somehow I'm working off. Yeah, okay. And then we jump right down to number three, which was number four, should be number three, right?
Those are all crossed out, are they not?
Well, thermal, solar, wind, and other renewable energy systems wasn't crossed out.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
So that should be changed to three.
So not required to observe.
Right? And that's that. Are you all happy with 8.3E2?
Yeah, I think that's as best as we can make it.
Okay.
For now.
So let's move along to 10.1 A3, for some reason, with supports insulation has been highlighted. I don't see what's wrong with that.
I guess I'm not sure why the word with is in there. Because it's as if we only should observe the ducts and piping with supports. I don't understand the word with.
Should it be including?
Maybe.
Including? Yeah. Judith has a point there. Including?
Or just no width.
Yeah, width, maybe.
It fans, pumps, ducts. I have to take out and also.
Yeah.
Piping, supports, insulation, air filters, registers, fan coils, units. And fan coil units.
I know. Could someone interpret it? It's a support that's actually supporting the unit, and the wall unit or something with supports underneath it.
Well, I think we were talking about piping, supports, and insulation. So maybe, maybe it should be. But we want the piping and. You see, the supports and insulation are for the coolant piping. You know, is what we.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's fans, pumps,
ducts and piping.
Ducts
and piping.
Ducts and piping.
That's one thing, like ducts and piping, and then a comma. I don't know what it is. So.
Well, ducts also need support and insulation too. So ducts and piping, support, air filters. Well, do we have to say supports and insulation at all in this section?
What's a support for ducts and piping?
Straps, clamps, so that they don't want to. Coolant piping coming from the
kink
to the unit.
Yeah.
No kinks. Has to be insulated so condensate doesn't drip. You know, and protect the piping. It's all part of ducts and piping. I don't know if we have to actually be specific about the supports and insulation on that.
Would that be just, would you say, professionally speaking, that's just assumed if I said, did you look at the ducts and piping that generally...
Piping might...
You know, home inspectors would say that counts for supports and insulation of those items.
That's what you would be looking at, actually.
That's what you're looking at? So I don't know. Do you need it to be there?
Piping might be the refrigerant line, and they need to be insulated so they don't condense moisture and cause mold and all that. So the insulation and supports are important to both ducts and piping. It's a bit of a clunky little area that also try and hit. Ducts, if we said ducts / piping,
how about we just
supports and insulation?
What if you
that's
just
one way? But
what if you just pulled the comma away from piping? And have it read fans, pumps, ducts, and piping with supports and insulation, comma, air filters, registers, fan coil units. If you put ducts and piping with supports and insulation as one statement with no commas, then that might fit.
Yeah, that's a good thought. That might even that would maybe be a better place to put it at the beginning of the sentence, mm-hmm. perhaps, and then everything else follows that since it's so weirdly done in the middle there.
Yeah, that might be better. Start off with ducts, ducts and piping with supports and insulation, comma. Then move fans, pumps, air filters, registers, fan coil units to the back.
Well done.
That should work, right? Just pull out a comma.
Your piping includes vent piping, correct?
Yep. Well, yeah, that's what you're looking for is kink piping and damaged piping, leaking piping.
Or, I guess it's cooling, so I guess way too many vents. Okay.
Instead of width, since I guess I get concerned about the word width because it's almost like you only have to observe the ones with supports and insulation. What if it said including instead of the word width?
Back to the word including.
That's how we started, right?
Yeah, at least when you...
Yeah, but including's better than such as.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Right?
And the definition of including says containing as part of the whole being considered.
Yeah.
So
that works.
Yeah. Or you can use... and there.
I mean, if you stick another and in there, it's...
Yeah.
The width doesn't work as well, so including is definitely better than width for me on that.
Yeah.
Good. I like that. We all happy? Hearing no problems, we're moving on.
Yep.
Okay.
We'll go
to 11.1F. 11.1. Kurt doesn't. Oh yeah, F. Okay, you want to stick primary function in here, which we have right at the end, to activate primary function. Okay, Aaron Green figured that putting a the to activate the primary function would be better, and an S on functions. So activate the primary function. So it would read installed ovens, ranges, surface cooking appliances, microwave ovens, dishwashing machines, and food waste grinders by using normal operating controls to activate the primary function.
Yeah, the primary function.
Okay. Good?
Function or functions?
Functions.
Okay.
Aaron Green is... We miss him. Okay. And we miss him. 11.3, inspector is not required to observe any non-primary function of the observed appliances. You got that in there? Okay, but that I would rather wordsmith this to take any out and put the inspector is not required to observe non-primary function features of any observed appliance, okay? Non-primary function features, all right? Because that's what we're really talking about is the non-primary function features, are we not?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, you like that? If there's no problems with that, we'll move along.
Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. How about convection ovens?
Convection ovens.
I think we should consider not requiring the inspector to observe convection ovens.
We have that.
Do we?
Where?
It's in.
Yeah, the first thing we did.
Now that's in the definition, isn't it?
Do you remember where it is, David?
Convection.
Yeah, it
primary
would be
function.
Up front, when we said such as, we added that one and said such as.
Okay, in the definition of primary function, it says the function of a device that is most reasonably apparent, such as heat provided at elements or burners. At a stove oven, but not added features such as clocks, timers, induction, convection, and air fryers or other characteristics. Convection is right in the definition.
So it's in the definition, so you think that covers us there. It's in the def.
Well, where else would you put it?
Yeah, no, it's embedded in the def, so I guess we don't need it as a not required to, as long as it's embedded in the right definition, right?
Yeah, it's embedded in the definition of primary function. As not included.
Well, then that gets us away from requiring the inspector to do convection.
Right.
Convection I know that was a previous discussion, and it sounds like we got it addressed.
Now, that is all of David's things, if I'm not mistaken. Wait a minute. Electronic controls. Let's go to the glossary. And David wanted to identify... electronic controls, and he wrote it in as digital, computerized, low voltage, or solid state equipment operation or management devices, which got my head spinning.
This actually is, was added into, we just talked about it at 8.3E2. And see if it remained in there, the word electronic controls.
Right. So we need to define it.
Yeah. And so that came from the pool and spa standards, actually. And the only difference is that last or, whether that stays in or or goes out, because in the pool and spa standards, the last or between the word operation and the word management is not in there right now.
I would cut it even sooner. I would write this up, David, as digital computerized low voltage or solid state operating devices and be done with it. Because you are talking about the operating devices here, are you not?
Yeah. That's a good thought. Although electronic controlled, is the word management important when you think of a cooling system where it has somewhat of a management side to it? Or, and that might occur with heating and cooling systems and that kind of thing. I don't know.
Not to me.
No, we
just I don't know what management devices means.
It's a control thing for us.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
All
so
right.
Then, how did it end up, would you say? Digital computerized?
Low voltage or solid state operating devices.
Operating devices. So we'll want to work on that change that on the pool and spas as well.
Okay.
Yeah, we will need parity on these two devs.
Okay. That, and then when we come to shutdown in the glossary, I think the word homeowner, I think it's highlighted because it should be one word probably. Shutdown.
Exactly. That should,
homeowner,
that should be
bottom
one
line.
Word. Do you have primary function in the glossary too?
Yeah. Now let's go review that again. Since we saw all the places we put it in there, the primary function now reads the function of a device that is most... No, wait a minute. Primary function. The function... is that your new?
The new is...
Okay, the function of a device that is most reasonably apparent, such as heat provided at elements or burners at a stove oven, but not added features such as clocks, calibration, temperature settings, induction, convection, air fryer, or other characteristics.
I like that.
Air fryer. Air fryer?
Yeah, I have never run into
Are we air frying
fryer.
Air?
Air fryer. Oh, David knows what that is.
Sounds like something at the fair or something. Fry bread?
Some people have got really elaborate.
Well, and I guess it's, I don't know, I think they've got ovens that have even oil fryers in them anymore, you know. Maybe we just take air fryer out because we still have or other characteristics.
Really? I'm not even sure I know what the hell it is.
I thought you got a little carried away with the air fryers myself. So pull air fryer, and I think we're all set.
Yeah, I think that's good. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Now,
I have two others. Is the word primary function in the definition of observe just slightly above?
Yep. Observe, the act of making a visual examination of the primary function of a system or component and reporting on its condition. Okay, we're putting it in now.
And then a major defect. This might be a last thing I wanted to have you consider there maybe was, is the word damaged in there at all after unsafe?
No, it just says a system or component that is unsafe or the primary function is not working properly.
So then give consideration, I must have thrown this in at the last minute to just to give thought to it. Major defect is used kind of throughout is what we have to isolate for. And so the word, or after unsafe, it could be comma, and then the word damaged. But I think that I'm kind of discounting it as I speak because, you know, it could be minor damage, it has no impact or all of that. So I think I want to withdraw the last handful of words I just said. So.
Well, thank you for letting us in on your thought process. If there's no other questions on this or additions to the glossary, I think we got it all there.
Peter,
yeah?
So back to observe, are we supposed to have primary function?
We do.
I don't see it.
You didn't put it in there, Kurt. Okay, observe should read the act of making a visual examination of the primary function of a system or component and reporting on its condition.
Okay.
So under observe, yeah, if you can throw that in, examination.
The act of making a visual examination
of a primary function.
Of the primary function, right there. Of the primary function
of
a system.
Yep, you got it.
Or component and reporting on its condition. Very good. Okay, now before we move off of these standards, anything else? Let's go to Arizona ASHI. Arizona ASHI has got their minutes in here, and they had a couple of concerns. Let's see if we have handled them.
And I did have one other thing,
Mr. Chair.
So back on primary function, there was a discussion weeks ago regarding testing of toilets and all the electronics now involved with toilets, and do we need to do something in plumbing regarding primary function of the toilet and not all the other things that toilets now do? Do we need to adjust that as the question under section seven, I guess?
Well, the primary function of the toilet is it flushes, right?
Right. We all know that. I'm looking to see if we need to clarify that we're only testing the primary function of a toilet. Right. Some of these have two different flushes. One works, one doesn't. You know, all these, you know, electronics.
Our definition.
Do we need
to
clarify this?
We have to observe the toilet, right?
Right.
Okay. Our definition.
Every day.
Every day. Our definition of observe.
Whether we want to or not.
Our definition of observe is the act of making a visual examination of the primary function.
Okay, so that's right. We built it in. Okay. So
that's our catch-all. All of the rest of this is kind of redundant,
right.
but we're putting it in.
Sorry. Thank you. Okay. It's already addressed. Thanks.
Next, in the ASHI minutes, it says, there's a paragraph here that says, next to be discussed were the Arizona standards of practice. A discussion was made as to the testing of the smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors. Some units are combination types and others are individual units for smoke and carbon monoxide. When testing, you cannot tell what section of the unit is responding when tested. Additionally, discussed is portable carbon monoxide detectors that are present. They can be removed from the house easily because they plug in. We should acknowledge that they are at the time of the inspection present and take a picture of them. Now, that's your recommendation to your home inspectors.
Right.
Do our standards cover your concerns with carbon monoxide and smoke detectors?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, it's hard to tell a lot of times, you know, if they are carbon monoxide detectors or combination detectors.
Right.
There's a little more discussion just what's on the minutes here that, you know, one inspector, or actually the inspector that brought this up, well, am I going to have to bring a 12-foot ladder in and, you know, climb up on that 12-foot ladder, you know, because it's in a, you know, vaulted ceiling or something like that, to find out if it's a carbon monoxide or combo alarm, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So he just basically, you know, Arizona actually, they wanted to nail down what the reporting criteria is going to be. You know, and maybe wordsmith, you know, the existing standard as it is.
Okay, now our standard does, as we changed it, it does say 8.3, the inspector is not required to test or operate, that's not the one, test smoke or carbon monoxide alarms. So it says right in the standards, the inspector is not required to test smoke or carbon monoxide alarms.
But we have to verify the presence of it.
Right.
Okay, now it does say up in here on G, 8.1G.
So if it's a combo alarm and it's 12-foot high, I mean, what's the criteria on inspecting that? I mean, it, you know, we have to crawl up to the alarm itself.
I think
it's find out if it says carbon monoxide, because we can't tell from here.
Right.
Why would you do that?
I think it's reasonable to say unable to determine.
Yeah. I mean, we're allowed to do that.
Right. I do it all the time in report. I think it's fair reporting, unable to determine if it's a combo.
Right. And all we're required, the inspector shall observe, G, the presence or absence and operation. Nope, that's not it. G, the presence or absence of smoke detectors, and, of course, the presence or absence of carbon monoxide detectors where applicable. So if you feel it's applicable and you can't tell if it's there or not, then it's the inspector's choice to either make a recommendation or to walk away from it, you know?
But there's no requirement for the inspector to get a ladder and get up there.
No, there's no requirement that you identify them. Just that if you know they're there, you say they're there. If you don't know they're there and you think they should be, you make your recommendation.
Or are they able to determine? I think it's fair.
Okay. I mean, so as written, as the standards are written right now, is okay?
I believe so, but you don't have to tell me. I think so. We can't write in the standards that you don't need to throw a ladder up against the wall to prove that it's not. Okay?
Such as.
Yeah.
Such as.
All right.
So, no, I'm just, you know, bringing it back to, you know, because they wanted some discussion about it.
Good.
Yeah.
So the standards are saying that you got to identify them if applicable, smoke, carbon monoxide, smoke detectors, mm-hmm. You got to just note that they're there, okay, but you don't have to test any of these. And, of course, if you don't see them, you would consider that an adverse condition.
And if you don't know, you got to say you don't know.
And if you don't know, you say you don't know, yeah. That's the way home inspections always are.
That's
But it can ruffle the feathers on your client. Because, you know, your client is saying, well, I'm paying you these $100, you know.
Well, then tell the client to help you carry the ladder in, and we'll both go up there and take
yeah.
it
Yeah.
You know, I've done that.
And ask the client to read the SOPs that you gave them before the inspection, before they sign the agreement.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's all we can do.
Okay, now
was
they also have
else
a concern.
On your... on your chapter, AZ actually chapter concerns, or
they also have a concern.
Oh, I'm sorry.
GFCIs needed to be tested, and AFCIs should be observed and tested at your choice. All building appliances should be tested, as it is up to you to choose the method for testing garage doors and report on how you tested the door. Solar systems should be tested and checked by a specialty contractor that is qualified to test the system. So. What you're talking about here is the GFCIs, they feel, need to be tested, and your AFCIs mm-hmm. should be observed and only tested if you feel like you can.
Yeah, okay? In other words, in a vacant
in
house.
In a vacant home. However, it says all built-in appliances should be tested. Now, we know that they're putting the dishwashers, the garbage disposers, the clothes washers, everything's going on ground fault systems now. Are your guys saying that you want those systems tested?
No, not necessarily.
All built-in appliances should be tested, as it is up to you to choose the method for testing garage doors. Okay, so what you're saying is you're leaving that up to the home inspector.
Right.
Okay, that's fair. And our standards do that.
Yeah.
Okay?
So, I mean, I guess what they're looking for is something they have to do versus something they can mm-hmm. say they don't.
Right, so the GFCIs, they should be tested, and the AFCIs just need to be noted as there, really.
Right.
And all the other ones that are on ground faults, the appliances that are on ground faults, we leave it up to them. There's no rule that says they have to test it. I hope. Let's look. What do you got for...
Back to the plug-in type on CO plugins. I think, don't we have permanently installed for
Maybe
CO?
Maybe that's the word we need in the standard.
Because we don't really respond to the plug-in. We're looking for permanently installed CO
right.
and smokies, right? Let's just take a quick peek back.
My reporting method is to at least report that it wasn't present at the time of the inspection, but that's not everybody.
That say on 8 here?
No, it doesn't say permanently installed.
Well, the question is should it then, and so we can address the plug-in COs.
Thanks for catching that phone.
And that would be in 81I.
You might have to go to HNI on that.
What do you think? We really don't have plug-in smokies. It's really just COs, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, but you do have the battery operated that someone could pull off the wall and take with them, you know, but you even two minor screw holes.
But it's still mounted on the wall. You know, if it's mounted, it's mounted, you know. But if a plug-in, you know, that it should be outside of our scope.
Well, isn't right? the object of inspecting these carbon monoxide detectors for the safety to determine that they're there if they're needed?
Right.
So to say permanently installed, but the house is full of plug-ins, all right? Does that?
They could go with the when they move out. They're going to unplug them and move them.
So if they go, you want the presence or absence of permanently installed? I have no problems with that. permanently install carbon monoxide detectors.
Doesn't that make sense? David Schwartz, are you in on this?
Yeah, I guess the only thing I think of is, like, I have a security system, you know, and they have components like carbon monoxide and smoke detectors, but it's completely portable. I could take it all out and take it to another home, and they're installed by a, you know, a double-sided tape. So the word permanent, is that permanent or not? You know, it's just starting to get a little more difficult to define, I think.
Or how about non-plug-in type?
Yeah.
Too clunky, huh?
Yeah. And in some cases, they're just placed in a way that you cannot really even test them at times, too. So,
yeah.
You know, I think, I don't remember what Ashley did, but it seemed like they were moving towards just verifying they either do or don't exist.
Well, that's where we are.
Kind of thing.
That's where we are. We're not looking to test them.
Yeah, I guess the question is there value in adding permanently installed for COs at least?
Well,
I don't know. We would just say whether they're there or not on the day of the inspection, yeah. I would think is probably the intent.
Yeah, all right, let's leave it.
We'll have no idea whether they're going to stay or not.
Right. Yeah, it's just that whole thing. You know, it's almost like the sales contract. It's whatever is permanently affixed to the home stays with the home.
Yeah, but I understand
where you're at.
But then the connotation, if we go with permanently installed, the connotation to that is that the plug-ins are not good, you know?
Correct. Meaning we don't have to observe them.
But we don't want to go into there saying to your client that, hey, all your carbon monoxide detectors are plug-ins. You really should have a permanent one.
Oh, we could say there's no COs, and then they leave them, right? Yeah. And they leave them plugged in. Maybe we should just stay away from it. I just wanted to bring it up to you guys.
Yeah. I think the presence or absence would be fine, and then the inspector uses common
sense.
Let's
leave it. I mean, if they're plugged in, I know it.
Report on the type, maybe. You know,
they are present, so.
Yeah, all right. The type, then that gets to be another problem.
Well, that's,
because that's
that
in
goes the, back on the inspector, though.
Well, that goes into the inspector's shell, A. Describe the type of carbon monoxide detectors. You want to add that in there?
No.
I'm just saying that, you know, make it a reporting criteria.
Well, that's where you would do it.
Choice of the inspector.
Well, the permanent type or temporary, or what kind of choice?
Plug-in or temporary, or however you want to phrase it.
Right? Unless if you want him to determine what to force him to say what type it is, that has to go into 7.2.8. To describe the type of carbon monoxide detector. But if you want him to just have the choice to say that, you got to leave it to his discretion.
Of course.
So right here, we just have an inspector shall describe the, I'm in the wrong section. Here it is. Inspector shall observe the presence or absence of carbon monoxide detectors. Shall observe. Well, type goes into describe, so you'd have to add this to another section. You can't put describe in the observe. You know, can't put type in the observe.
Okay.
All right.
Does that get us in trouble when the definition of observe is to report on its condition?
If you start putting types in there, yeah. Presence or absence is fine.
Yeah,
and then the inspector's just got to, if he's concerned, say, I'm not concerned with the plug-in type, because you've got to remember your inspection is a snapshot in time. Mm-hmm. If someone says, oh, they pulled all the carbon monoxide detectors out and all the kids in the bedroom died, well, they were there at the time of the inspection. You know, they shouldn't have pulled them out. That's their problem.
Yeah. My reporting criteria would probably be let them know that there was plug-in ones there at the time of the inspection. Just leave it at that.
That's what it is. I agree with that.
All right. Where are we at, Mr. Chair?
We're moving. We're done with the glossary. We're done with the primary function. We're done with the standards. Kurt, what was the last changes we made? I think Kurt stepped out.
Yeah.
I don't know, would you guys, if you changed anything while I was out?
Electronic.
We changed everything.
Electronic controls, primary function.
Primary function. Anything else with the defs?
Major defect, did we add damaged, or David walked away from that? I forget. Unsafe, damaged, primary, unsafe. Major defect, what do you have in there?
All right.
You left it out. We didn't like it. And then homeowner was the last one. And that's, I don't think you missed anything.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm going to run the def for secondary fire egress past Bruce Barker to see if he has any better wording than what we have for secondary fire egress. It's just one I'm a little nervous with because it's new territory for us, and we want this to be as clean and clear as possible. So,
what is your secondary? What is it? What is the?
What does this currently say?
Openings such as doors or windows that allow direct access to the exterior of the structure from the bedrooms.
I know it's short and sweet. I just want to double check it. No, I'm not saying we should change it. All I want to do is get another opinion just to see if.
Well, I don't think you need an opinion of the.
Is that a glossary term?
I don't think you need an opinion of the definition. I think you need an opinion of the rule. Let's see what we say about that.
Yeah, what I'm saying is to just see if there's anything else we need to do with this definition for secondary fire egress is my point.
Definition? The definition is as clear as a button. I think you're talking about what we need to do as far as inspecting it.
No, it's not. It's actually the definition. I want to make sure it's as clear as a button to the entire world. And so I just want to...
Secondary fire egress, openings such as doors or windows that allow direct access to the exterior of the structure from bedrooms.
Right.
Okay.
No, I know. It's short and sweet.
So what are you looking for? What's concerning
confirmation.
What's concerning
that you? That this is the best we can make it. That's all. All I'm saying is I'm just going to run it by somebody just to see if there's anything else we might need to do with it, since it's an important new... little bit of a risky area for us from an SOP standpoint. So I'm just letting you know, if it's okay, I'm going to get another opinion.
On the definition.
On the definition.
Not on the way we handle it.
Correct.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, you have trouble with that.
Can you shorten it?
Can I shorten it?
The definition?
I don't know. Maybe.
Extend it?
I don't know. I'm not saying to shorten it, or I'm just saying just to get another opinion. I hope that's not
on the definition of egress.
On the definition, yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah. I don't agree.
Okay. I'll let you know if I come up with any epiphanies here.
It doesn't matter. Let's go to pools.
Okay.
Okay.
So we're actually going to go into change of pool standards?
Well, we're concerned only with primary function and electronic controls. We just want to be sure they are also in line with these standards.
Okay.
Do we have pools on here?
They are on the handouts.
How come this thing keeps timing out on me?
I didn't want to necessarily limit the pool discussion to those items here.
Well, let me take a look. Are the pool standards in here?
They should be. I have them up here as well.
I don't have a page number, but... Oh, yeah. Page 35 of 47, Peter.
Okay. Now, our concerns were that these jive with our other standards. So, do we have a glossary for pools?
We do.
Let's start there. What we changed in the main was automatic shaker, blah, 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 blah. Do we have observe? Yeah, the act of making visual examination of a system or component and reporting on its condition. Should that be the primary function, like we have in our standards?
Right, we need to move primary function in there, don't we? Right?
David?
I was thinking through that, and I just, because I wrote the same notes, and I think that the equipment in a pool does not have as many, like,
ancillary things.
Multiple functions
right.
of different, you know, I just don't think it's as troublesome as maybe the kitchen appliances or HVAC systems or any of that. It's pretty straightforward, I think. So I changed my mind about throwing in primary functions, but that's just me.
I have no problems with not adding or changing. Go ahead.
And then I think that, if you guys agree with me, that just a couple of minor things in the glossary is the second definition. I think it should be child hyphen safe, if you guys agree.
Child
safe.
Child what?
Child. Child and then dash or hyphen, child safe.
Child safe is a hyphenated word.
Oh, you
right?
want to
That's
make
a compound
it
word,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and then on the very last two, there's a couple of double spaces on system between the word more and the word functions. And then in technically exhaustive, there's two of them between instruments and testing and between conclusions and.
Yep,
and then I think we redid electronic controls, didn't we? If you guys, in the home inspection one, I think we redid electronic controls.
And we want to use the same.
We want to make those
match.
Yeah. So we said solid state operating devices, I think.
Digital computerized low voltage or solid state operating devices. Yeah, that's what we put. Okay.
And that was all I had for the glossary.
So you weren't so concerned with that. Okay, good. Paul?
And
go ahead, Dave.
Yeah.
We're still listening.
Then the other thing, so then at 3.2A4 is where child safe came from, mm-hmm. so that needs a hyphen.
Right.
Child safe hyphenated at 3.2A4. And then 3.2B, I think it should say openable, one word, instead of readily, and then openable.
Yeah, openable is one word. You see
yeah, that probably the computer did that. It happens yeah. to me all the time when I'm doing a word like that.
And remove
right.
remove readily, you think?
Readily?
Is that
no,
what you said?
Just the, I'm just saying the word openable
okay,
should
okay,
be one
got
word.
It, got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's all I really spotted in there. I didn't obsess on the thing, but that's kind of from okay. my review of the standard.
So that's really no changes to the point.
Oops, I just spotted another double space. I don't know if that's searchable, but there are multiple double spaces. 1.1 between of and Arizona, 2.1 between better and understanding.
Yeah.
It might be because I took a PDF and then I turned it into a Word document that you might be seeing some of these.
Yeah, the best way is print it out and just pull them together.
Yeah. Yeah, you can just globally pull all those, maybe.
Yeah, because it shows there's only like a single space between like this better and
yeah,
understanding. It's not really...
Formatting, don't... Well,
yeah. Yeah. It's easier to find when you print it, really, and then take a look. So I don't see that we changed anything there, except definition of controls.
A hyphen,
sure.
I think we put a hyphen in. Right?
We put a hyphen.
Yeah, and let me
just
bring up my...
Yeah.
So, David, I'm kind of struggling with one other thing here a little bit, and maybe you can help clear it up. Are salt systems required for the inspector to observe? And if not, are they... Are they? So what's your opinion on that, salt systems?
I think they're impossible for us to evaluate. Are they not specifically excluded? Water treatment, so it's an exclusion number 24, so that's
we got a long list of them.
B, 4.4 4.2B24, water treatment or chemical dispensers. So the water treatment is like, that's the salt system.
That's it. Yeah. Okay.
Water.
All right. All right. All right. I'm with you on that. I didn't see it in there. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I have one other quick question. 4288. What do I have on some kind of question? 4288.
Presence or absence of pests, such as wood damaging organisms, rodents, and insects?
Pests. So we're looking for termites in the pool now. Is that it? And I'm trying to understand the wood damaging organisms.
That's excluded.
I realize it's excluded, but I'm trying to figure out, does wood damaging
like a
organisms
a spa cabinet?
Okay, I guess, yeah, the wood in the spa cabinet, even though it's redwood. Okay.
They might have framed it with standard pine or something, and then the skirting.
Okay, I was trying to figure out the application of wood in there. Okay, all right. Mm-hmm. No, I guess I don't have anything else on this. I did kind of scan through. Everything looks pretty clean on this until we find something else. No, I don't have anything else, Peter, on this, on the pool stuff.
Roger?
I don't do million pools, so it's all good with me.
I do want to make sure we're not going to run into any kind of issues if we've got two different definitions of observe between the two SOPs, even though it's just one or two words, but they do differ a little bit, and I want to make sure we're not going to get in any hot water anywhere. I think it was observe that we...
The primary function we took out of observe is all, and the pools.
Right. So we took primary function out of observe. Yeah. And so we've got two different definitions of observe between the two SOPs, and that's my point. Does that matter?
It's just the primary function, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the only thing that differs from it. But it is... I don't know why it bothers me that the definition varies between the two standards. It just some thing in my head says they should be exact if we're going to put them in there as part of the law. But I guess the application works.
I'm sure not in the field as much as you guys are. Is there anything on a pool that, like, that primary function on even the real sophisticated systems where there's something that we would want to protect ourselves from with regard to primary function?
I can't think of anything. However,
I don't know. They're so damn complex.
Can we?
They're so complex, and they're only getting more complex. But I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. I'm just throwing it out.
I have no problem with putting in the definitions to match, even without going in and putting primary function throughout the whole standard. Okay? So, Kurt, can you run up the glossary of the standards of practice, not the...
This is down here, right?
If we can see the glossary of the standards of practice and do some comparisons here. Automatic safety controls, we don't have... is that the pool or is that...
Pool is this clean looking one. Let me get to the top here.
Okay. I don't want to see pool. I want to see the other glossary.
However, we do need to also change our automatic safety control def in pool to match the primary SOPs, right?
That's what I'm doing.
Right.
Okay.
Does that just have its own glossary, or is that...
Yeah, it's got its own glossary. Do you feel a need to have one glossary meet...
No, I just couldn't find it.
It should be at the bottom of the pool standards.
The automatic safety controls and pools are a little bit different with regard to perhaps the need of what the controls do.
You're right,
on a pool or a spa.
You're right. We're talking about electrical current, loss of water, loss of ignition, fuel leaks, freezing. There's a lot of different things in here. The only ones I'm really concerned with, really, would be the electronic controls, which we changed, and major defect. And we changed that, and maybe we should add what was that one we?
Primary function.
We can put that primary function into observe and add normal operating controls. Change that to be the same. Not normal.
So,
what were the other controls?
If primary function exists in the glossary, it had to have come from somewhere in the body of the standard. So, I don't know of anything on a pool, but you guys might know better.
He's right.
Like if there's a heater has one job, the filter has one job, the pump has one job. I guess it could be like energy efficient pumps, the variable speed. Mm. But we can kind of evaluate if that's working a little bit. I just don't know of anything on a pool that has multiple jobs.
Yeah.
That require us to define primary function.
Yeah.
No, and I don't think there's anything wrong with a few glossary items being different between the home inspection and the pool and spa. I think that's not something that's catastrophic to have.
I say we leave it all alone. Just do those hyphen, do the cleanup, and be done with the pool and spa. That's my opinion.
Agree.
Paul?
Yeah, I'm good.
You good? Roger? Okay, you got to
move on.
Ooh, she'd be good. Okay.
I think you guys got through everything. You put off the rules for another time. And,
Now, what we need to do is we want to read all through those rules and understand them before we come back so that we can beat them up. Committee Chairman's report, nothing new. Okay, we got nothing. We have finished the agenda. Anyone have any comments on agenda items?
Well, let's talk about future agenda items, right?
Let's do that.
So we know we already have...
How long is it going to take you to get another opinion on the definition of fire egress?
Oh, a week.
Don't
worry about that.
What I'm concerned with is more the way we handle the fire egress.
Right.
The definition seems fine to me, but what we have in the rules is what you really want to be looking at for fire egress.
Let's look at that real quick and see where we're referring to that interior, right? Let's just take a peek at that.
You're at the interior. You have...
11.2, report the absence of secondary fire egress from bedrooms. Shall report absence of secondary fire egress from bedrooms. Right.
So you're going to take it to Bruce Barker to determine whether our definition is proper in the way
and
we're
the reference to it
is
as
proper.
Clean as it could be. Yeah.
Okay.
I just I wouldn't hurt just having his mind on this, just because I'm as you can tell, I'm still a little nervous with it. It's a big addition to these standards, and I want to get it as right as we can. So
presence or absence of a secondary egress to the exterior from bedrooms. Okay.
Right.
All right. How soon do we want to get back on these standards? What's it look like? How long before we ever have to go to the rule changes, Judith?
It's just
100 years away.
I mean, once you're done, and we know Ashley's like, yes, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to the board, and then if they give us the thumbs up, then it's submitted to the governor's office.
Mm-hmm.
So that hopefully they'll allow us to open the rule package.
Mm-hmm.
Then we start that process with public meetings and FERC and all that.
So we really want to clean up
not only the SOPs but the rule package and submit them both together to the board? Is that the thought?
Well, because it is a rule package, even if you didn't do anything else except go with
the SOPs.
Version of the SOPs.
It's still a rule package. Statute,
yeah, the SOP is in rules.
Then, right. So obviously, from a timeline standpoint, we need to finish cleaning up the rules and then submit everything. So, but from your standpoint, there's no specific immediacy, like it has to be by a certain date, or there's nothing else from a meeting standpoint that needs to happen, or any other corollary activity. Okay.
It's not like legislation. We can do it anytime.
Right.
If we're ready, we can.
It's not running a bill here, right?
Right.
Right. Right.
And this, so this has nothing to do with the, with a piece of legislation then. The rule package would be approved by the board and then go to the governor, go to GIRC for...
Yeah, well, it doesn't go to GIRC until the governor's office...
Gives approval.
...reviews it. And that's a different thing since recent years.
At one point, so...
So then if they don't ever say, yes, you can open a rule package...
At one point, would it become law?
At best... About 18 months after a rule package is opened.
Which is the governor's desk delay kind of thing, right?
That's with no delay. I mean,
that's with no delay.
Package is open. Like, that's assuming they say, yes, you can open a package, proceed to GIRC. Then, if we get to that, I'll leave it next meeting if you want. I can print you out. There's kind of like a flow chart of what happens with X amount of days between events once a package is allowed to be open.
Okay. And the 18-month moratorium or whatever that is, that's like...
That's just standard.
That's
standard. The only exception to that is if you're granted expedited rulemaking for something that, you know, that this isn't.
Is that just a required period to ponder the changes to make sure we really want them? Or
public input.
Oh, public. Okay.
Yeah.
18 months, huh? I didn't think it was going to be that long.
I don't think anything's changed. I'll look at it and see that
is
basically...
No.
Okay.
It's longer than that. We got to get it through this committee to the board.
Oh, I know.
The board's got to approve.
No, I know.
Okay, then it's got to go to the governor, and it could sit there forever.
Right. Yeah. Okay. But we're still, you know, backing into our next meeting here.
So there's no hurry.
Right.
So when do we want our next meeting?
Hit a summer meeting.
We try and take summers off.
We have momentum. Don't wait too long.
Yeah. We got momentum?
Yeah.
Okay, then let's do it.
All right.
Let's
look at our calendar.
We're in April.
Go June or July.
You want to do June?
Can try.
Now, can we have everything together? Can we get our homework done about these definitions by June? Read them through?
Yeah.
Understand them? Compare them to what we already have. See what these guys are doing to us.
I'm kind of blown away by the 18-month thing.
So. Oh, no, it takes time. But you guys, you can do your own, as, you know, normally, waiting. Because we're just going to adopt what you do. You got to do it first anyway.
What, the standards?
Yeah, the changes to the standards. Once you guys approve it, the ASHI will adopt it.
I keep bouncing around at this level here. I have, you know, I mm-hmm. took it.
Well, we're done except for the egress.
How about Wednesday, June
15th? I'm good with that.
Or another Wednesday.
16th?
Wednesday the 15th.
Wednesday the 15th.
6:15.
All right.
9:30 a.m.
Work
as usual.
6:15. Yeah, we'll try it. Yeah.
You good?
Yeah, let's try it.
May, June. It's a long way off. Things change.
All right, David. I don't know if you heard that. June 15th, Wednesday, for the next one.
That one does look good. That looks good for me too.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thanks. You ready for a motion? Anything else?
You good with June 15th?
Yes.
So far, everybody?
At this point, yeah. Mm-hmm. Phone's off right now.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion, a final motion.
All right, anything else? All right, motion to adjourn.
Need a second.
Second.
Discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're out of here.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.